described this as a ceasefire. We're still aggressively defending our positions. However, we have ceased offensive operations for now. With more on the latest developments in Fallujah this morning is AP News correspondent Lourdes Navarro, who provides this account on the scene there.
Before they came here, they were gearing up for a peacekeeping mission. The commander of 1-5, which I'm with, had made them all grow mustaches as a kind of gesture to the Muslims in the country who think facial hair is very important. Once they started this combat operation, he ordered them to shave them all off. The reason for that is that this is no longer a peacekeeping mission.
AP News correspondent Lourdes Navarro in Fallujah this morning. Reaction still abounds over yesterday's appearance by National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice before the Independent Commission on the 9/11 attacks. While the president seems pleased with her testimony and her defense of the administration, reports in several morning daily papers indicate most families of the 9/11 attack victims were not satisfied and felt the administration is still withholding something. Despite that, Rice maintains no stone was left unturned in their quest for information about terrorist activities before the attack.
I just don't buy the argument that we weren't shaking the trees enough and that something was going to fall out that gave us somehow that little piece of information that would have led to connecting all of those dots.
Condoleezza Rice, as she appeared before the 9/11 nonpartisan investigative panel in Washington yesterday.
You care about your family and you love them. That's a given. But have you stopped to think about how they'd get by if you were suddenly gone? The Legacy Group of America will show you an affordable way to ensure that your family is taken care of. Find out how to purchase an A-rated guaranteed premium whole life insurance policy. This will enable your family to take care of final expenses, pay off credit card and mortgage debt, or provide a college education should something happen to you. There is no better way to provide for those you love. Call the Legacy Group of America at 1-800-4-LEGACY for a free quote. You'll be amazed to learn how affordable whole life policies from $5,000 to $25,000 are. The Legacy Group of America carries policies for smokers and non-smokers and no physical exam for up to 80 years old. That's right, no physical exam is required. Plus, all premiums and cash values are guaranteed for the life of the policy. Call Legacy Group of America today at 1-800-4-LEGACY. Call 1-800-4-LEGACY. All policies subject to insurance company underwriting.
Out of Washington this morning, taxpayers have been filing electronic tax returns in record numbers, the Internal Revenue Service reported 1 week before the April 15th filing deadline. Nation's tax collector said Thursday that they received 5 million more electronically filed returns compared with the same time last year. Despite spending millions of dollars on ads, neither President Bush nor Democrat John Kerry has gained an advantage in the latest public opinion poll. AP survey finds 45% of voters support Bush and 44% support Kerry. That's unchanged from a month ago. Even though recent economic reports are promising, the American people aren't so confident about what lies ahead. That's reflected in the AP Consumer Index. It's dropped 13 points from a month ago. Wayne Gilman, Air America, Radio Network News.
If you were injured, attorney Michael Gunsberg is here to help you. Call him today. Whether you or a family member were the victims of medical malpractice, or your baby suffered injuries at birth, or if you were in a car, trip and fall, or construction accident, attorney Michael Gunsberg can help you. Call him, 212-725-8500. The initial consultation is free, and there are no legal fees unless he's successful. Speak directly to an attorney. Call 212-725-8500. You can reach the attorney on the web at gunsberglaw.com. That's GUNZBURGLAW.com. The law offices are conveniently located near Grand Central Station. Call 212-725-8500. Attorney Michael Gunsberg wants to help you. Write his telephone number down. 212-725-8500. Don't wait. Call him today. 212-725-8500.
When I fell, my doctor didn't give me Tylenol. She gave me Advil.
I was surprised. My doctor gave me Advil for my back.
Advil is my doctor's choice for muscle pain.
Truth is, doctors nationwide choose the advanced medicine in Advil most for tough muscle pain, strains, and sprains. Advil gives you better relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Now I always make sure I have Advil in the house.
For better relief, advance to Advil.
Welcome to Tape 5, The Backpat. Let's say your child comes home from high school. They did something good. It's time to give them The Backpat. Now you try The Backpat. That's it. and pat, pat, pat.
It's really not that difficult. Encourage them. Get them to graduate. Don't drop out on your kids. For a free brochure, call 877-4KID. That's 877-F-O-R-A-K-I-D. This message brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
If you were injured, attorney Michael Gunsberg is here to help you. Call him today. Whether you or a family member were the victims of medical malpractice, or your baby suffered injuries at birth, or if you were in a car, trip and fall, or construction accident, attorney Michael Gunsberg can help you. Call him. 212-725-8500. The initial consultation is free, and there are no legal fees unless he's successful. Speak directly to an attorney. Call 212-725-8500. You can reach the attorney on the web at gunsberglaw.com. That's GUNZBURGlaw.com. The law offices are conveniently located near Grand Central Station. Call 212-725-8500. Attorney Michael Gunsberg wants to help you. Write his telephone number down. 212-725-8500. Don't wait. Call him today. 212-725-8500.
Air America Radio. A guillotine for ditto heads.
Good morning. I'm Mark Riley, along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron, here on Air America Radio. It's 7 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning's Edition.
Today, we talk to a young man living in Baghdad about life in a quagmire. Plus, a Supreme Court justice wouldn't do something illegal, would he? That and more coming up, but right now, I've got Sue and Mark with me. Good morning.
Hello, Mark Riley.
How are you?
Sue Ellicott.
Good morning.
How's everybody doing?
Just great, despite the memory failure of supposedly the smartest person in the White House.
Unbelievable. Why? It's like, have you ever been caught in a lie? Have you ever lied before?
Oh, not this. Quite like that.
Well, you know, if you're a liar, which I have been in my life, I've done some lying because, you know, I did have a first wife.
Aha!
And when you lie like this, all of your time has to go into constructing the fiction that is now your truth.
Did we live parallel lives?
But do you remember how much time? Well, you remember when, you know, back in the old days when we were bad guys and we were, you know, screwing around?
Yeah.
Just how much of your time you had to put into making the lie solid, like to the core, to where, like, you rationalize away the truth, and then all you have is this thing that you've invented, and that becomes your truth. You have to commit to it that deeply.
That's an alternate construct.
Yes. Which thing are you inventing, or were you lying about?
Where you were, what you were doing,
who you were with. What's that weird mark on your neck?
Oh. Yeah, those sorts of things.
Great. I am a first wife.
There you go.
Nice. I'm not feeling terribly comforted.
But, you know, I have a new wife now, and I'm starting to get a little panicky because, you know, we're not together. She's in Los Angeles, and I'm here. And my new fear, though, and since I'm sad to say that Stern's been taking off a lot of networks, so I might be a little filthy here. But I'm sad to say that I'm concerned that I'm aging, you know, and now that we're not together, I think it's important when you age, you be with the person you're with, so you do it and neither one of you notice. But now I'm here and she's there, and I'm afraid that I'm going to show up, and she's going to be like, oh, my God, when'd you turn into old guy? You know, and I'm not worried that I'm getting older, but I've had moments, Mark. Like, she's younger than me, like a few years. Like
a couple of years.
About, yeah.
14?
12.
Okay.
By 12 years.
Okay.
She is 12 years old.
No, she's definitely not. And I love her, and she's beautiful. But here's what happened, Mark. Like, I was in one of the, we were having sex, okay? And it was going well. You know, I was pretty proud of myself. I thought I was in the groove. I thought I was pouring guy. I thought I was really doing it, right?
You were thinking that as you were going along?
Well, yeah, because, you know, there's those moments where you get into a groove and you're like, wow, I'm really good at this.
I know, that's a problem. You don't want guys to be thinking about that.
No, I don't always think about it, but, you know, it's sometimes it's better to think just on a, you know, a control level. Well, here's what happened. Right in the middle of me thinking I'm doing a great job, she looks up at me and goes, hey, don't kill yourself.
Like, you know, when did I become that guy? Like, what was I like? Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. You know, what did I look like? You know, what happened to Thanks for Trying?
Maybe it was, like, the sound. Maybe it wasn't the look.
I don't know.
Maybe it was the wheezing.
I just was like, I really felt old after that.
Oh, and baby.
I'm having a little concern about that. And aside from that, I plowed through another pint of ice cream last night, which is so sad because there was a day where I'd be, you know, doing other things other than ice cream.
We'll
talk about that later. But maybe we should talk about the news. And
yeah, we'll talk about the news. But we'll get back to your sex life later. The New York Post today has National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice on the front page saying the lady is a champ. The coverage inside is just as glowing. But not everyone shares the New York Post's position on Rice's testimony yesterday before the panel investigating September 11th. In fact, some of the panel members themselves seemed less than impressed with her answers. Here's just one of her exchanges with former Senator Bob Kerry during one of his attempts to get an answer out of him.
You said the president was tired of swatting flies. Can you tell me one example where the president swatted a fly when it came to Al-Qaeda prior to 9/11?
I think what the president was speaking to was...
What fly had he swatted?
Well, the disruptions abroad was what he was really focusing on. When CIA would go after Abu Zubaydah, go after this guy, and
Dr. Rice, we only swatted a fly once on the 20th of August, 1998. We didn't swat any flies afterwards. How the hell could he be tired?
We swatted at... I think he felt that what the agency was doing was going after individual terrorists here and there, and that's what he meant by swatting flies. It was simply a figure of speech.
What actual actions that figure of speech referred to, Condoleezza Rice never said, and Kerry's exasperation came through clearly, especially because the White House put a limit on her time. In fact, Kerry accused her of filibustering. But as you're about to hear, Condoleezza Rice vigorously denied that she was trying to limit the number of questions asked of her by drawing out her answers.
The fact is that what we were presented on January the 25th was a set of ideas and a paper, most of which was about what the Clinton administration had done, and something called the Delinda Plan, which had been considered in 1998 and never adopted.
And that's all the time we have.
It's good to have a multi-syllabic name in moments of crisis, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
He should have let her finish a sentence at least once, though, and then gone back and attacked her, I think. It would have been a bit more dignified, because she was, you know, she wasn't going to come up with anything that was going to impress him with her answers anyway.
Well, that's true. But, you know, what I can't figure out here is that you have all these different newspapers with all these different takes about the same testimony. The New York Post calls her a champ. The L.A. Times calls her a little bit less. The New York Times...
A cha.
Yeah. And the New York Times says she's a chif. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Steve Conde.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's actually quite predictable, is that she went out there, and I think if you felt that she had been lying or the Bush administration was lying on how prepared it was for attacks from Al-Qaeda before her testimony, you were not going to have your opinion changed by yesterday. You were just merely going to have it corroborated. And
you can see
that with all the press coverage. You could see it on the television news yesterday. You could see it in the criticism of Richard Benveniste, who went after her quite hard, and he was criticized for being partisan.
They said he was rude. The Post
he wasn't partisan. He was just trying to, you know, cut her off at the end of the answer so it would, you know, be clear what he was asking her. I don't think he was being partisan.
It was a problem that they had only those 10 minutes. She could only have 10 minutes with each panel member. 10 panel members in 10 minutes. So it was 100 minutes. So they did want to jump in, and when she was giving these long-winded, indirect replies to their questions, they felt they had to go in and just kind of nail getting an answer.
So
otherwise, their time was going to be up.
By indirect, you mean sort of like, you know, kind of talking around things?
Kind of, well, I'm glad you asked me that.
Right, right.
Senator.
Because for some reason, all I got out of it was that, you know, they no longer placed, you know, all of the blame on Clinton. They seemed to spread it out over a few administrations, and then they just seemed to place, you know, all the blame on the intelligence community.
George Tenet.
That guy's taking the hit, man.
Yeah, he is. Taking a serious hit.
But all you need is that sort of, you know, the couple of minutes when she was made by Richard Benveniste to read out the memo, which was called, and he pushed her on this repeatedly so she would actually cough up the title in front of the TV cameras.
Right, that's what he wanted.
The memo called bin Laden determined to attack inside the United States. You don't even need the rest of the memo.
Yeah, here, right.
All, inside all the United someone States. Had to do was read the headline and then do something about it. It's completely staggering that anybody could say that the administration could not have had any idea that an attack was imminent, or even not even imminent, but was going to happen at any time inside the United States. It's completely ludicrous.
She was responding to the question about cells, like were there cells. And then she said, well, you know, then she answered.
She thought they were talking about stem cells.
Stem cells. Well, no, she was trying to avoid it, you know, by saying that this isn't clear. So if this was called Bin Laden determined to attack inside the United States from within the United States in New York on September, it got cut off. See, we didn't know the date, so there was nothing we could do about it. If we'd only known the date, we could have.
But it's interesting, Mark Riley, you said you thought that the coverage was, in fact, incredibly partisan.
Yeah.
But that I mean, you probably saw this as well, Mark, that, yeah. Maren, that when they, I saw Fox News, and they quoted her at the end of the news. This was supposed to be her proof that how the U.S. could not have known what was going on. And this is what she said, that the intelligence chatter said, unbelievable news in coming weeks. Big event. There will be a very, 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 very big uproar. And this was her justification that the administration could not have known that something big was going to happen.
It also said, party, party, party.
Party, party, party.
Here we come.
Was this written by second graders or something? It's unbelievable.
No, I think she was avoiding the whole thing. And it's this weird defense that, like, had we only known the dates, time, flight numbers,
and
the number of people, destination,
et cetera, and so on and so forth. Still ahead, we'll get a live report from Baghdad, one of the Iraqi cities not under the control of Iraqi rebels. Plus, Mark has his presidential briefing right here on Air America Radio. Air America Radio, where we support a politician's right to role play in the privacy of their own bedroom, but think it is obscene when they do it on the deck of an aircraft carrier.
When I fell, my doctor didn't give me Tylenol. She gave me Advil.
I was surprised. My doctor gave me Advil for my back.
Advil is my doctor's choice for muscle pain.
Truth is, doctors nationwide choose the advanced medicine in Advil most for tough muscle pain, strains, and sprains. Advil gives you better relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Now I always make sure I have Advil in the house.
For better relief, advance to Advil.
Welcome to Tape 5, The Backpat. Let's say your child comes home from high school. They did something good. It's time to give them The Backpat. Now you try The Backpat. That's it. And pat, pat, pat.
It's really not that difficult. Encourage them. Get them to graduate. Don't drop out on your kids. For a free brochure, call 877-4KID. That's 877-F-O-R-A-K-I-D. This message brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Well, actually, for New York's Roundabout Theater Company, whether or not they're going to be is no question at all. Over 800,000 people enjoy their productions every year. And in just the last 10 years, Roundabout has won 15 Tonys and 18 Drama Desk Awards. But the only prize they didn't have was a theater all their own. But that's now changed, thanks in part to a bond issue insured by American Capital Access. The funds raised have helped Roundabout buy Studio 54, the same space where they packed audiences with a 5-year run of Cabaret. The building is ideal for Roundabout staging of classic American musicals. And the bonds are pitch perfect for New York investors. They're fully insured by ACA, so they deliver a higher yield without higher risk. And for city residents, they're triple tax exempt. Around this time of year, that makes for savings even your accountant can get theatrical about. To learn more, ask your broker about ACA-insured bonds or visit us at ACA.com.
Planet Chance. Get your groove on for peace. Chris Decker, founder of Earth Dance International, explains.
Earth Dance is a global, synchronized music and dance event for world peace.
The highlight is the prayer for peace. Ambient music with spoken word.
A universal prayer. It's been translated into many different languages and that gets played at the same time all around the world.
The idea is to create a one-day global dance party and everybody dedicates that party to a local nonprofit organization in their city.
So many, many promoters around the world actually choose environments environmental nonprofits locally and start recognizing that it's really important to look after your environment because the planet is really not at peace, it's out of balance.
This year's Earth Dance is set for September 18th.
The idea is to get really active locally but then join this global event.
Shake it for peace.
The website is www.earthdance.org.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
The O'Franken Factor.
You're always introduced as a speechwriter for Nixon, who didn't write the famous line, "I am not a crook."
Air America's Al Franken.
But I always say that actually Ben wrote the first draft of that.
I wrote, "I am a crook." And it was later edited to be, "I am not a crook."
Ben, I like this line, but maybe we should add another syllable.
Al Franken and Catherine Lanford, weekdays noon to 3 on Air America Radio.
I'm Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio with Mark Riley and Mark Maron. Joining us today on the phone from Baghdad is Salam Pax, probably the best known blogger, the Baghdad blogger as he is known, and a columnist for the British Guardian newspaper. Salam Pax became known last year with lots of speculation about his true identity for his first hand reports on what was going on in Baghdad during the US-led invasion. Good morning.
Good morning, Salam.
Hey, hi.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thanks for being with us.
Oh, pleasure.
Little delay.
Yeah. So today, it's 1 year, really, after the liberation of Baghdad. 1 year ago today, the Saddam statue was being toppled, and the U.S. forces were celebrating, the Iraqis were celebrating in the streets, and the U.S., you know, felt everything was working. Are you feeling liberated over there today?
Well, unless everybody's partying at the mosques, the streets are pretty empty. We don't see any parties on the streets. So, I don't know. I guess we are feeling, you know, better and liberated, but the events in the last couple of days have cast, you know, a bit of a dark shadow over the 1 year anniversary.
Today we're seeing that, you know, U.S. Marines have briefly stopped some of their offensive operations on Fallujah, which is west of Baghdad, but that they then stopped that after about 90 minutes, and there are some negotiations happening with local leaders to try and calm the situation down. What's your reading on it all now that fighting has started back up again?
Look, this is the one thing that we were worried that would actually happen, that the Shia, for some reason, would, you know, become a bit unsatisfied with the situation and they start fighting. It's not good, and everybody knows it's not good. The problem is that we are at a situation now where you have almost, you know, as thuggish people as Saddam's people used to be, who are forcing shops to close down and say, "We are organizing strikes." They are making, you know, they're organizing their own checkpoints. It's kind of really strange after a couple of months of being free of all this pressure for it to come back in such a strange way. Someone who calls himself a true patriotic revolutionary, Sadr is very, very scary, to tell you the truth.
This is Muqtada al-Sadr, who's the sort of rebellious, young, early 30s cleric. How much support do you get?
Very young.
He is very young. Very young, very irresponsible. But how much support would you say there is for him? Are people worried that he seems to have so much sway?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, the thing is, certain situations and events allowed him to become this kind of outsider. He's not part of the governing council, so he can't say that I'm not part of this American plot, you know, putting all these people in the governing council. I'm not part of it. I can do whatever I think is really good for the Iraqis. And you know, this situation put him in a place where he can say things and people think, yes, it is true. Besides, he's the only one you see on the streets. I mean, the governing council, you see them on TV, but never really with the people. people. And him, Sadr, because he's, you know, he goes to Friday prayers, he's there, he's seen him, he has contact with people. And somehow some people identify with him probably. I don't know. It's very worrying.
How do you feel about the governing council?
Oh, dear. Well, you know, they mean well. They mean well. The problem is that sometimes it feels like you're watching a couple of kids in a sand pit. They fight over things which, you know, are not really essential at the moment. We need you to stand a single line and show us that, you know, you can do things. The problem is that they can't agree among themselves.
Let me ask you, there are still some foreign hostages being held, and I'm sure you're aware that they threatened to burn three Japanese hostages alive.
Oh,
how real is that threat?
Oh, God. I hope it's not real. I hope they're just trying to pressure. It's way too scary. It's way too worrying seeing all these images the last couple of days. Everybody was going, my God, how could they do that? It was just so weird. Just, you know, this is the next level. We are all not prepared for this.
Salam, Pat, you are known for your blogs, that your, you know, your reports on the internet. How? But you're in Baghdad, okay, and a lot of the fighting has been in Fallujah and in Kut and other cities. How are you getting all your information from other people on the net?
No, I mean, you go around, and there's, because, look, you know, when you're an Iraqi and you're not obviously a reporter with a camera or carrying one of these IDs, it's kind of easier to go around. And you know how you can react to certain things. You know, I kind of really feel for all the reporters here because it's at the moment it's getting dangerous and dangerous by the moment. And if you cannot really, you know, feel whether there's some hostility there or whether people are friendly, it's very difficult. And you know, going now and reporting in Fallujah, I mean, oh, God, I wouldn't go to Fallujah myself, and they have to go. Poor them.
Hey, what do you miss about the old Saddami days?
I'll tell you one thing. What we really miss is less traffic on the streets. I cannot believe how incredible the traffic is these days. It's like it's all the time. You have horrible traffic. You cannot get anywhere. I mean, if there's one thing...
That's the worst thing?
Empty streets.
Do you fear at all for your... I mean, you're an international... You've become an international figure. Do you ever fear that they're going to come looking for you?
Well, the thing is, in Baghdad, I'm just Salam. Because I don't run around, you know, with a TV crew or with cameras, nobody really knows what I'm doing. That's what's nice about the internet. You don't have to show your face all the time, and people don't really recognize you on the street. And, you know, people in Iraq don't really care about what I'm saying anyway.
Okay, well, you know, keep that identity under wraps, then. It's the safest thing. Thank you. Thank you very much, Salam Pak, Baghdad blogger, for joining us. And over to Mark Maron.
Thank you.
Today, the presidential briefing that we take off of whitehouse.gov every day.
Yay.
As you know, being president is a full-time job. It's been a long week for the leader of the free world. He put in 2 days. But he's going to continue his watch from the Western White House, the Crawford, Texas Ranch. Nevertheless, he's got another busy schedule. 7 a.m., wake up, inspect presidential staff, get out of bed. 7:05, stay on message, no silver bullet. 8:30, attend morning meeting, appoint chefs to make smiley face pancakes. 9 a.m., meet with reporters on front lawn. Pretend can't make out questions because of helicopter. Do Reagan hand the ear thing and wave. 11:15 to 11:30, mosey around the ranch with hunting and fishing groups. Kill all God's critters. 11:30 to 12, check email. Order extra inch for penis. 2 p.m., unpack summer shorts. 3:45, call Condi from Muscle Truck 1. 5:15, phone her with Cheney in secret downtown Omaha bunker. Oops. 6 p.m., video con with Tony Blair. Pants optional.
Ouch.
8:30, whittle. Big day for the press. That's our presidential briefing for today, Good Friday.
All right. Up next, guess who's whipping the Easter Bunny? And later we talk to former Clinton press secretary Joe Lockhart. Don't go anywhere. This is Air America Radio. News headlines are next.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The U.S. troops and Sunni insurgents have resumed fighting for control of the city of Fallujah after a slight lull in the activities for talks for peace with a delegation of sheikhs from the city. Those talks fell through in short order. The insurgent attacks on U.S. military forces never really halted for the negotiations, according to reports from a U.S. Marine commander. Most of the families of 9/11 attack victims attending yesterday's independent commission hearing with National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice are not happy with what they heard. Rice never formally issued an apology, but said she was emotionally moved by the experience on that fateful day when counterterrorism expert Richard Clark appeared before the same panel and apologized to the American people. Rice and others in the Bush White House felt it was inappropriate since he no longer served in government. And former President Bill Clinton met privately with the September 11th Commission in the shadows of the appearance of Condoleezza Rice. He discussed terrorism policies and his decision not to retaliate against al-Qaeda in 2000. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio Network News.
Air America. Air America.
Listen, man, adding fractions is no big deal.
No?
No. You just got to find what they call the common denominator. Let me show you.
All right.
Now, see these bottom numbers?
Yeah.
These are the denominators. That one's a 4 and that one's an 8.
Mm-hmm.
You just double both of these numbers so that becomes an 8 too. Then you add them up.
Man, you sure make this easy.
Charles Bennett always dreamed that after college he'd return to the old neighborhood as a teacher. But without the money for tuition, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Oh, sure.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. Call 1-800-332-UNCF. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Hey, it's Mark Maron here on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. Give us a call at 1-866-303-AARZERO. That's spelling out the word zero, Z-E-R-O. Or 1-866-303-2270. If you're listening in New York, you're probably on 1190 AM WLIB. In Los Angeles, 1580 AM KBLA. Thanks for listening. So we got some interesting stories up now. There was a situation in a
an
Easter presentation in Pennsylvania where they apparently replaced Jesus in the crucifixion scene with the bunny.
The Easter bunny?
Yes, the bunny was being, you know, flogged and whipped, and I don't know if they followed through with actually crucifying the bunny, but needless to say, parents were shocked and children cried.
No kidding. Isn't that a bit like dismembering Santa Claus?
It is a little bit, but I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what point were they trying to make?
Yeah.
Were they trying to say, like, were they trying to integrate the, maybe they thought the kids didn't see that the Easter bunny was connected to the Jesus thing, so they thought, well, let's make the bunny Jesus.
Jesus, yeah.
Or maybe they're insinuating that perhaps Jesus was actually in a bunny suit when he was crucified, which I think would make all those pictures a little ridiculous.
Like the Passion of the Rabbit? Is that what they're trying to do?
I'm trying to picture who's the art director at this church going, I got an idea.
Yeah.
No, we just get fake blood. We put the guy in the bunny suit. They're breaking Easter eggs. Could you imagine the chorus of crying children like, Mommy! What are they doing the bunny? What the? Oh my.
This is in the kind of what were they thinking category, isn't it?
Absolutely. Was he being creative? Did he really think that? I understand the message because I think that a lot of kids probably don't connect the bunny with
right,
the crucifixion.
But they're not connected.
I know that. I think that they were trying to, you know, sort of activate the symbol somehow.
I read that they also had a drunken man and a self-mutilating woman.
What does that mean, a self-mutilating woman? Was there a woman walking across the stage piercing her nipples?
I hate to think. They could have had the that performance artist who smears herself with chocolate, with Karen Finley.
Karen Finley. Yeah. I saw her once perform.
It's pretty disturbing.
No. Karen Finley was hilarious because everybody who went to see her the night I went,
yeah.
thought that she was like a porn actress.
Yeah.
So they thought this was going to be this whole erotic thing. There was nothing but guys. And then when she started, you know, when she went out and started smearing herself and cursing people out, people like, what is this?
I think she's actually very funny, Karen Finley is. But I just think that the decision for this presentation, I wonder if it was like some sort of hipster dude thinking like, you know, we're really going to, you know.
No, this was a church. This was the Glassport Assembly.
There are hipster
God.
People in churches.
But that's what was weird. Why would a church, I don't understand a church allowing a drunken man and the self-mutilating woman as part of the, to try and explain to try and explain Easter.
The drunk guy was kicking the bunny.
What is wrong with a nice little Easter egg roll, huh? Call me old-fashioned.
They said they were breaking Easter eggs.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're breaking them. Like,
on the bunny.
Maybe some of our callers have something to say about this. Let me give out the number again. 1-866-303-AAR0 or 1-866-303-2270.
We got Carl in Brooklyn. Carl? Are you there?
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
Good. What's up, man?
How you doing?
Good. Good to hear all you guys. I don't know how she appeared to you, but beyond the substance, that helmet had hairdo. She's kind of reptilian looking, isn't she?
Yeah, and she looked really like she had Rice, Condoleezza Rice.
Condoleezza
you're talking
Rice
about with her helmet hat.
At least we hope you're talking about.
Absolutely.
She with those like she looked a little robotic. She looked like a robot that hadn't slept in 3 days.
You know what she ended up talking about with the FBI? I think is going to be her undoing. I think she might have told an FIB.
No, you mean the stuff when she kept saying that it was all about structural problems, the fact that intelligence didn't communicate between the agencies.
I think that was all just bloviating, but she actually told a couple of tips. She said that she had tasked, you know, when they turn nouns into verbs,
yes.
She had tasked it out to all these FBI field offices, and they came right back at her and said, we've spoken to every FBI director, we have found no record of this. And then, what's even more outrageous, this lazy sack of crap lies on his ranch. He's doing it again today. He never met with his own FBI director from that August 6th memo.
There were tumbleweed problems.
Okay, Carl, but I think you have to back off on the hairdo stuff. This isn't Queer Eye for the Straight Staffer. We have to concentrate on her the substance rather than her hairdo.
No, I think you can make fun of her all you want, any way you want. I encourage it. Sue has a problem with it.
We agreed to disagree.
No, I think she probably did pull an all-nighter. Her eyes did look a bit red, and she was in the hot seat. Not an enviable place to be, however much you dislike her.
Well, that's
but I just think, back off on the hair, guys.
I think her hair looks silly.
Why, if a guy had ugly hair and was testifying, we'd say something. It's not like we're singling her out.
Thank you so much,
woman.
Carl. Thank you for calling her on her FIB. That was very clever. And bloviator is now going into the vocabulary.
1-866-303-AAR0. 1-866-303-2270.
Mary in Manhattan.
Larry, good morning.
Good morning, folks.
How you doing?
I'm good. You know, one of the things that I think is important about this, the right wing of this country constantly says that the left wing is soft, and I agree with that. I think that we on the liberal or left side do underestimate consistently the evil that governments, particularly our government, has done. Not to single them out, many governments have.
Mm-hmm.
Single
them out.
Well, how this relates to 9-1-1. Look, for 9 months before 9-1-1, Unescapably in the news was the issue of the illegality versus illegality of the election. Suddenly 9-1-1 comes along, it vanishes from the news. Also, all sorts of right-wing agendas were pushed in, like their watering down of the Bill of Rights with search and seizure and stuff like this. A lot of stuff they had been trying for decades to get pushed in. Now, let me give you some examples quickly of how our government has done murderous things.
You're not driving, are you, Larry?
No, I'm not.
You're absolutely right, Larry, that 9/11 was an enormous smokescreen.
Well, I think that it could have been. I think that we shouldn't dismiss that maybe even the government, the CIA, had a hand in it. For them to sacrifice 3,000, please,
I'm on
don't
board
dismiss
with that.
It.
I'm on, I didn't. I've said it on air before, Larry. I'm not dismissing it.
We've gone back and forth on this.
At the risk of repeating ourselves, Larry.
Do you know what Tuskegee was, guys?
Yeah.
Where they
the syphilis experiments?
They
yes.
Infected black men with syphilis and left them untreated to see how it would be.
What about the Northwood plan?
That I don't know, but how about the overthrow
of Patrice Lumumba, the outright murder of him, the overthrow of an elected government in Iran to put in a murderous dictator, the Shah, who killed thousands of people.
Yeah, you can't underestimate him. I understand what you're saying.
Of dictators like Somoza, of Ferdinand, of Marcos in the Philippines, of
Pinochet in Chile. The list goes on and on.
Do you have a website, Larry, where we can go to some your list of conspiracy theories?
Listen,
some proven, some not.
Listen, all I'm suggesting is this. Do not dismiss evil that exists in the government and how many of them will do anything to further their ends.
I absolutely agree with you on that.
I mean, but I don't know about specific conspiracies, but...
No, I don't think it's unfair to even think along those lines. And also, hey, Larry, enough coffee today, I think, for now.
Larry, thanks for calling. Let's go next to Florida and say good morning to Ken. Ken, how you doing?
How you doing? Am I on?
Yes,
you are.
Oh, hi. I've nicknamed George Bush "Bushy of Arabia." He seems to have corralled all the Arabs together in one camp.
Finally,
the great uniter.
Finally, yeah,
I'm a uniter, not a divider.
He's united the Arab world against
us. Uniter, not a divider. What about that? Didn't in 1933, didn't somebody, the United States, sign a pact with Saudi Arabia saying we'd be out of there in 60 years?
I don't know. We'll have to get our researcher on that. But,
we'll get our researcher, Susan, onto that.
1933, did he say?
Yeah, that was the FDR thing with the first with Saudi Arabia.
With the first member of the House of Saud.
Right. Hey, Richard, are you there in Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Don't cry.
Please don't cry.
Oh, I got a little girl just arrived here from Korea yesterday.
Oh, mail order?
Mail order, yes.
How you doing, Richard?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
All right. What's on your mind?
Well, I figured given the president's record on the environment and he doesn't like flouting its lies, we should just layer the earth entirely with DDT.
He's on that. They've just passed that through Congress.
We won't have to swat any flies anymore.
Or people or anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as far as being a uniter and not a divider, I forgot which justice said it. The only unanimity that you can ever really achieve in a democracy is that of the graveyard. So.
Wow.
An optimist on Good Friday.
All righty. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. Please, you take care.
Please get on the air in Boston.
We'll be there soon.
We're working on it. Definitely working on it.
Was that a fly he had for our benefit buzzing in the background?
I think they were doing that in the booth.
There he is.
Apparently, we've got enough technical support now to have the goofy sound effects.
You know, this is a fly with the most irritating sounds I've
ever
heard.
Do you mean great sound effect?
Goofy, great sound effects. That's what radio's built on. You know,
right.
Wait till the fart noises start happening. That's one that never stops usually once it starts. Ginger in England. How? It's our regular caller.
It's our regular caller from across the pond.
Good morning, Ginger.
I watched BBC again last night. You know, BBC is such a wonderful broadcasting. They showed close-up video of Condi's hands.
Oh, really?
While she was testifying.
Yeah.
And they didn't even have to say anything. Her hands were shaking badly. Oh. Really? She was trying to turn the page, and they were shaking, and then she crossed her fingers.
Uh-huh. She did?
And her toes. Yeah. Did you not see her toes?
I don't know about the toes.
No, her hands were bad enough, and she was shaking badly.
Well, I mean, you know, it was definitely a hot seat.
She probably needed a margarita from the place we went yesterday for Durf.
One thing they didn't mention on all the coverage yesterday was the comment, I think from the senator that was talking about swatting at flies, and he talked about the heavily censored media, and he said that the media was under heavy restrictions.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a nice little jab.
Yeah, he really got into it with her. There was a couple of Ben Veniste really got into it to her with her.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ben Veniste is a former Watergate prosecutor. I remember him when he was questioning figures, you know, people like John
Dean. Yeah, he's on John Dean flashback.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sitting there saying, oh, Ben Veniste is going to tear her. Well, never mind. Let me not say that. But,
yeah.
I mean, and he's described in the papers, some papers, as being rude and overbearing. That's his job. That's what he's supposed to do.
Yeah, they can't. It's not a partisan thing. It's the job of the
No, you're right. But the problem is that it has become a partisan thing. It's almost had to become
political
a
political year.
Thing.
I mean, how's it not going to be?
It's a political thing, and it's a political year, and it's a political issue, and that they are.
Thank you, Ginger. By the way,
yeah. But by the way, you know, it might not have been so partisan a thing if he had funded the panel to begin with. I mean, they asked for $11 million, and he turned them down cold.
No, and it wouldn't have been as partisan had he put Condoleezza Rice up there under oath, giving testimony a week or 2 weeks before this became such a huge issue.
Definitely.
Well, right now, still ahead. We'll talk right now, still ahead. Right, that's where I'm at. Yeah, two places at once in my mind. We're going to be talking with former White House Press Secretary Joe Lockhart, which we're looking forward to. Plus, it's the final day of our countdown to communion for John Kerry. Will he find someone to do it? Stay with us on Air America if you want to find out.
Air America Radio. A liberal dose of reality and sapphire and satire.
Introducing Venture Magazine, the progressive voice for the next generation of market makers. Hi, I'm Kevin Halloran, publisher of Venture, the magazine of risk and reward, where opportunity is seized on every page and where new ideas spring to life. For a free trial issue of Venture, call 866-MY-ISSUE and learn how Samsung steps into the cool as a serious threat to Sony, or how the hidden wealth of Vietnam may fuel the best investment opportunity of the year. In this issue of Venture, you'll discover the emergence of nanotechnology and separate science fact from fiction. Experience intimacy in the City of Angels at the Frank Gehry Design Disney Hall and enjoy the new American splendor. For those who have achieved, those who desire to succeed, and those who dream, Venture is your magazine. Call 866-MY-ISSUE to start your subscription or learn about employment, investment, and partnership opportunities. And remember, in business and in life, always venture.
Public relations. Monty Python called it a modern, useless profession. Too bad they were wrong. PR has become the way crafty corporations and even the leader of the free world convince people that pollution is harmless, war is peace, and greed is good. No wonder Fenton Communications doesn't like to be asked at parties what we do for a living. But we are proud that we help our clients make the world a better place. We serve MoveOn.org, Air America Radio, the Harvard School of Public Health, the Natural Resources Defense Council, What Would Jesus Drive, Freedom to Marry, and more. With media strategy, advertising, organizational development, and publicity, Fenton Communications has been around for more than 20 years. Based in New York with offices in San Francisco and Washington, D.C. We salute Air America Radio, tackling right-wing hate radio at last. Fenton Communications. Visit us at www.fenton.com. Just don't call us Flax.
Daddy, why is the sky blue?
To match your pretty eyes.
Nope. See, all colors have wavelengths that are diffused by oxygen and nitrogen. Since blue has the shortest wavelength, it's diffused up to 10 times more.
Who taught you that?
Mommy.
By 6th grade, too many girls lose interest in math and science, which they'll need for most future jobs. Keep her interest alive. For ideas, go to girlsgotech.org. It's her future. Do the math. A public service message brought to you by Girl Scouts of the USA and the Ad Council.
Okay, will y'all parents please simmer down so I can take the classroom attendance? Justin's mom.
Present.
Lisa's dad. I said Lisa's dad. You know, get involved in your child's education, whether it's checking homework or visiting with the teacher. Call 1-800-281-1313 or visit www.schoolsuccessinfo.org today. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and Partners for Public Education, a partnership of the NAACP and People for the American Way Foundation.
The Majority Report.
It's amazing to me that mainstream media perpetuates the myth that George Bush is popular.
Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar.
This myth that he's a great leader and that people are supporting him and that there's a vast coalition out there internationally. It's just not true. I've never seen this type of distaste for an American president and American foreign policy.
Air America's Majority Report. Weeknights 8 to 11 on Air America Radio.
With Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron, I'm Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. And right now, we've got a special guest who's joining us via telephone. She is Salon.com blogger Geraldine Seely with the Salon Story of the Day. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Geraldine.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Let me ask you right off the top. There is some controversy and some question about the president's daily brief from August 6th of 2001. The White House is obviously a little hesitant about releasing it. What's your take?
Well, first, it sounds like they are, although it'll be interesting to see what it looks like when they release. I'm sure they'll be redacting things. It might look like, you know, the president's medical records from the National Guard by the time, you know, we get our hands on it. But, you know, the title, Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States, I mean, that was one of the big moments from yesterday when Commissioner Richard Benveniste made Condi Rice actually say the title, which was the first time anybody heard it.
And you know, tried to stop her from talking. It was beautiful.
Right, exactly, because the title itself just says it all, right? And so Bush, you know, was on his ranch in August of 2001. And
as he was yesterday.
Right,
and
exactly,
today.
As Condi did. You know, he gets this document, and, you know, people are starting to say, you know, Condi went there, yes, she defended him, but all these, you know, that's what everybody's talking about today, is that the president had his hands on this thing a month before September 11th, and what did they do with it?
Doesn't it look to you, though, that they definitely knew more than they're saying? I mean, isn't that what you got out of it? That's what I got out of it.
Yeah, well, it seems like, you know, they had this, you know, they had this document. They had these threats, you know, just this torrent of terror threats that came in the summer of 2001. And as Jamie Gorelick said yesterday, who's one of the Democratic commissioners on the 9/11 panel, the Transportation Secretary didn't know about it. The FAA didn't know about it. FBI field office didn't know about it.
How can you not tell them, right?
Right, exactly. And so, you know, there are all these legitimate questions now, but what did you do with these threats? And did you just, you know, Condi Rice yesterday was sitting there, you know, and was saying, you know, well, no one handed us a plan. You know, no one said this is what you're supposed to do. And the question is, isn't that your job? Isn't that what you're supposed to be doing, is taking these threats and then moving it back down the chain and saying, you know, let's do something about this? But it's almost like they were saying that's somebody else's job.
Right. Did you see when she was reading the transcripts and it actually said, knock, knock, who's there, terrorists?
Right. No, you know.
I got to ask you, I mean, isn't what we're talking about here a failure in the structure of government itself, where different agencies don't speak to each other, different agencies are set up against each other to compete for dollars or for presidential favor or whatever? It doesn't seem to me that any of this has changed over time.
No, it doesn't. That's exactly right. And, you know, and that's something that, you know, Condi Rice yesterday was talking a lot about, you know, structure. But they were being told by, you know, Richard Clark, for one, you know, not to let the bureaucratic problems that have plagued, you know, everybody in the history of government, you know, stop them in dealing with Al-Qaeda. And so there's, you know, at some point, structural problems become problems with individuals and actual people in government, and which includes Condoleezza Rice and George W. Bush, you know, and so they can only really blame, I mean, this is their, you know, their FBI team, their CIA team, and their, you know, they were in charge.
They're going to end up just blaming a guy who used to work at the FBI that they don't have his number anymore.
But Geraldine, isn't the issue of classification really essential? I mean, yesterday Bob Kerry read a section, a declassified section of a report, and it said that the FBI saw indications, and President Bush was advised that the FBI saw indications that Al-Qaeda operatives had made preparations to attack, to hijack airliners inside the U.S., and all this was the stuff that Condoleezza Rice said, I really don't remember. I mean, this goes back to the whole Reagan, you know, I don't recall. It's going to be, I would say, come into the language as a kind of catchphrase, I really don't remember.
Right.
How can she really
right.
not remember?
Yeah, I mean, that's what you just said, Bob Kerry quoted, was that's the president's daily brief that everyone is waiting for them to declassify and to see what parts of it, you know, we're going to be able to read. And we'll see, you know, does the document actually reflect, you know, what she described it as, which was she's kind of downplaying it. Oh, it's a historical, which was the word she kept using yesterday, historical document.
And then that's God knows there's nothing to learn from history.
Right, right.
When you're reinventing the world.
Perish the thought.
Maybe she meant hysterical.
Yeah. Right.
It was hilarious. Right. They talked about cells.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I mean, from what the commissioners were saying, you know, it that brief showed the FBI had knowledge of, you know, patterns of suspicious activity in the United States consistent with preparations for hijacking, that there were Al-Qaeda cells in the United States, and that Osama bin Laden wanted to commit hijack attacks against the United States. I mean, that all of those things, you know, people have to judge for themselves. If you read it, would What would you think?
Geraldine, you know, Cecilia of Salon.com, you've written about the holes in your blog, the holes in her testimony, the things that don't make sense and are not consistent with what we know. What did she do well? What did Condoleezza Rice do well on Capitol Hill yesterday?
Well, you know, honestly, I think what she did well is more on a surface, superficial level. And, you know, she kept her composure. She, you know, everybody was talking yesterday, which honestly, you know, some of it I thought was a little patronizing. You know, people are like, she's a classy lady. You know, yeah, she is a classy lady.
But we got a report from England that her hands were shaking.
We're all classy ladies.
Yeah, we are classy.
Ladies are classy, Geraldine. Wouldn't you agree? But isn't that...
You know, she represented... So, I mean, for people, you know, for the Bush administration, people who support President Bush and Condoleezza Rice, you know, she went up there and, you know, basically held her own in terms of, you know, not collapsing in a heap.
But wouldn't we expect that? She's supposed to be the smartest person in the White House. She is
right.
The kind of right-hand woman to George Bush.
That's scary by itself.
Don't tell Dick Cheney that.
Yeah, right.
But that's, you know, really, I mean, I think, honestly, in the end, that is the high point of her testimony, was just being there and you know, and seeming, you know, like someone who seemed credible, you know, because, you know, she was commanding and, you know, presented her argument well. But,
and
you know, then
everything.
When you start taking it apart, you know, in the end, did she really do that well? Because now there are all these questions being raised about, well, now we know that, you know, a month before September 11th, there was this, you know, there were all of these threats that they were aware of, that all these other agencies did not become aware of, and this brief that the president had in his hands as he was clearing brush on his ranch. You know, I'm not sure what that does for them.
Geraldine Seely, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You take care. Have a good weekend.
She was conversational. Nice.
Yeah, she was definitely
good information. Well, you know, it's time now for Countdown to Communion. Easter is a mere 48 hours away. It's crunch time for John Kerry, who desperately needs a Catholic priest to administer communion. Please, at this point, Kerry is not picky. At this point, he'd accept an Olive Garden... At this point, he'd accept an Olive Garden busboy in a bathrobe jamming a breadstick into his mouth, all right? I mean, he needs something. Come on. All right, if you can help, we urge you to contact the Kerry Camp. Wait. I've just been handed a bulletin. It says here, John Kerry has found a priest in Boston willing to give him communion. This can only be interpreted as meaning one thing, or two things, actually. The Catholic Church believes gay marriage and abortion are okay, folks. It's okay, all right? So if you have a gay son or if your daughter is the town pump, go ahead and invite them over for a little Easter ham. Because apparently God loves all his children. This has been Countdown to Communion for the last time, I'm assuming.
Town pump?
Yes,
I was
going to
say, am I missing
pump.
Some really disgusting reference? I'm glad it's
yes,
not in
you
my
are.
Head.
Yes.
Okay, I'm the naive one, folks, if people haven't realized.
Yeah, pump is a...
I think we have to go.
About a shoe.
I think we have to move on.
He's talking about a shoe, trust me.
Come on, we got to spice it up now.
In the next hour on Morning Sedition, more rights with your morning coffee, plus a conversation with one of our former employees. Find out what he has to say right here on Air America Radio.
On a broken guitar in all the streets, break a tropical charm, the embassies lying hideous yards where tourists snarl and decay. But when they dance in a reptile blaze, you wear a mask, an equatorial haze into the past.
We must take the battle to the enemy.
The administration is very proud of the precision with which they went about yesterday's attack.
There have been apparently very few casualties, which is exactly what the United States government wanted.
This all has to be challenged. Dissent is what makes this country healthy. And the media has to fight for that, and we have to fight for an independent media.
You come and listen to support it.
I'm Tim Robbins. Please join me, Amy Goodman, Bernard White, and Juan Gonzalez on Tuesday, April 13th to celebrate the launch of Amy's first book, The Exception to the Rulers, exposing oily politicians, war profiteers, and the media that love them. On Tuesday, April 13th at 7 p.m. at Cooper Union's Great Hall at Astor Place in Manhattan. For tickets to the event and the reception proceeding, call 212-431-9090 or go to Democracy Now.
ShopNow.org.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the home of Air America Radio.
In the next hour of Morning Sedition here on Air America, former Clinton press secretary Joe Lockhart reviews Condoleezza Rice's performance. Plus, did Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia do something unconstitutional? We'll tell you, unless he violates our constitutional rights, too. But first, the headlines.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. Despite a lunchtime break for peace talks with a delegation of Sunni Muslim sheikhs, the fighting has resumed in the Iraqi city of Fallujah. Details from that meeting are not known, but it was aimed at ending the days of deadly violence for control of the city. U.S. coalition forces just the same remain confident of victory. State Secretary Colin Powell, speaking to members of the Senate Foreign Operations Subcommittee yesterday, echoed the same sentiment in testimony.
Whether we are confronted by an outlaw and his mobs claiming to themselves the mantle of religion, or by disgruntled members of the former tyrant's regime, or by foreign terrorists, we will deal with them.
State Secretary Colin Powell in Washington yesterday. President Bush gave National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice a verbal pat on the back, approving of her performance before the panel that is looking into the 9/11 attacks. Rice documented the administration's actions before the attacks, making clear there was no silver bullet to prevent the worst assault on American soil from ever happening at the time. During an exchange with the panel yesterday, she maintained that the terrorist threats were at best vague.
The threat reporting was frustratingly vague. Let me read you some of the actual chatter that was picked up in that spring and summer. Unbelievable news coming in weeks, said one. Big event. There will be a very, 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 very big uproar. There will be attacks in the near future. Troubling, yes. But they don't tell us when, they don't tell us where, they don't tell us who, and they don't tell us how.
National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice before the 9/11 Independent Investigative Panel. Meanwhile, the Center for American Progress, a Washington-based Democratic think tank, cited well over two dozen instances in which they say Rice was essentially not telling the truth about the administration's focus on terrorism before the attacks.
Hey, it's Lobster Fest, and all the things we're doing at Red Lobster. Imagine this, succulent lobster, fresh asparagus, and tender penne pasta, all tossed together in our special creamy garlic Alfredo sauce. Well, why just imagine it when you can savor it right now? Lobster asparagus pasta with salad and fresh baked Cheddar Bay biscuits for only $10.99. Imagine that.
The way we do the things we do, for you.
There's a resort called Give Kids the World where children with life-threatening illnesses can fill their week with pure joy. Kids and their families indulge in simple pleasures like swimming, visiting local Orlando theme parks, and eating unlimited ice cream, all for free. Call 800-995-KIDS or visit the Give Kids the World website at gktw.org and help give them a time to remember. Brought to you by Give Kids the World and the Ad Council.
A majority of Americans supporting affirmative action believe race relations have improved since the Civil Rights Movement and approve of interracial marriage. This according to a new poll. Still, 49% of the blacks said they had experienced some form of discrimination in the month preceding the poll, and 62% believe they were treated somewhat or very unfairly. Clear Channel Communications, the nation's largest radio chain, has announced it was dropping shock jock Howard Stern from its six stations that aired his program across the country, except New York. Companies suspended Stern 2 months ago. Clear Channel says Stern's show created a liability for them and other broadcasters who air it. Organization's president says Congress and the FCC are beginning to look at license revocation and they're not willing to take that chance. And even though recent economic reports are promising, the American people aren't so confident about what lies ahead. That's reflected in the AP Consumer Index. It's dropped 13 points from a month ago. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
To be or not to be? That is the question.
Well, actually, for New York's Roundabout Theater Company, whether or not they're going to be is no question at all. Over 800,000 people enjoy their productions every year. And in just the last 10 years, Roundabout has won 15 Tonys and 18 Drama Desk Awards. But the only prize they didn't have was a theater all their own. But that's now changed, thanks in part to a bond issue insured by American Capital Access. The funds raised have helped Roundabout buy Studio 54, the same space where they packed audiences with a five-year run of Cabaret. The building is ideal for Roundabout staging of classic American musicals. And the bonds are pitch-perfect for New York investors. They're fully insured by ACA, so they deliver a higher yield without higher risk. And for city residents, they're triple tax exempt. Around this time of year, that makes for savings even your accountant can get theatrical about. To learn more, ask your broker about ACA-insured bonds or visit us at ACA.com.
Hello.
Hello. This is Danny Glover.
Danny Glover?
I'm giving a wake-up call to every man in America. Mr. Johnson, did you know that at every age, American men have poorer health and a higher risk of mortality than women? Men experience higher instances of death due to hypertension, cancer, stress, HIV, and depression. As a matter of fact, men live sicker and die sooner from all but one of the leading causes of death. We take more risks, handle stress differently, and are less likely to schedule checkups or to follow up when symptoms arise. If you really want to be a man and take care of your family, you can start by taking care of yourself. So schedule an appointment with a doctor and find out what might go wrong before it does.
I'll call today. And thank you.
You're welcome.
For more information, contact the W.K. Kellogg Foundation at WKKF.org.
Dear Calvary Hospital, when my wife Maureen's cancer advanced, her pain tremendously increased, a pain that no one person or any hospital could ease. We knew that this was no way to live and certainly no way to die. And one day I visited Calvary unannounced and was still given a full tour by one of your staff. I immediately realized that this was no ordinary hospital. Once at Calvary, Maureen's suffering eased. She was sitting up, talking, and even eating ice cream. For those few precious days, you gave her back her dignity, and you gave me back my wife. I tell people today not to settle for just any hospital. There is another place. It's called Calvary. Sincerely, Ben Fargioni.
This is Frank Calamari, president of Calvary Hospital. Insurance companies do not have the right to deny you Calvary's expert care. In fact, it's the law. So don't be denied. Call us at 718-518-2000 or visit calvaryhospital.org.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It's 7 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today, what kind of man would violate the Constitution? Would you believe Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia? Yes, of course you would. Plus, we've got former Clinton Press Secretary Joe Lockhart on hold. And there's nothing he can do about it. But I would like to address, you know, because I've caused some problems on Good Friday here. That
yes.
I want to say that I'm a Jew. I'm not a Jewy Jew. I have the hardware, but I haven't really connected it in a long time.
That's like saying you're Jello, but you're not Jello Jello. What does that mean?
It means that I'm not religious. I was born a Jew, but I choose not to, you know, to be Jewish. Yeah. No. I mean to practice the religion.
Okay.
You know. But I didn't used to talk about being a Jew on stage, and the first time I came out as a Jew on stage, I was in North Carolina several years ago. There were 400 people in the room. No one's laughing at nothing. 400. No one's laughing.
I was going to say North Carolina, good place to do
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Interesting choice.
Sweat is spraying out of my head, you know, and which might have been why I was bombing, because it's weird when it sprays. You know, people up front are like, what's the matter?
Yeah. Projectile sweating.
Exactly. Yeah. But I don't know why I did it. Just in the middle of a joke, I stopped and I said, you know what? I'm a Jew. Just to see what would happen because I was down south.
Did they just start laughing?
Because I hate myself. And and sure enough, some guy sitting right up front turns to his wife and says, I knew it. You know, like whatever led up to that statement was a healthy mental process. You know, so I couldn't help but push my luck. I said, you know, I think that the Christians are getting a bad dossier on the Jews. I think there's some misinformation going around. I want to clear some stuff up because I'm here to help. Let's start with holidays. For instance, the Jews have Passover, and you Christians have whatever it is you do with the bunny. Oh, yeah, but we're the ones with the freaky rituals. You know, go find the colored eggs, kids, and you can eat a chocolate rabbit. Yeah, but the Jews are the freaks. Sit on the fat guy's lap and ask him for free stuff. Yeah, we're the weirdos. Then I said, if you don't know what Passover is, it's a ritual dinner where we have a service, then there's a meal, then there's the sacrifice of a Christian baby, and then dessert. And I got to be honest with you, a lot of people laughed, but I'm pretty sure I heard a couple people go, I've heard that. You see what he's doing? He's telling the truth, and he's twisting it, trying to make it funny. He's manipulating the truth like a Jew.
You need to be going on to the pagans, though, don't you? Because the bunny and Father Christmas, Santa Claus, they're the pagan stuff.
Yes, they but they were co-opted, weren't they?
Somewhat.
Aren't the pagans
what do you mean somewhere?
But, you know,
what do you mean somewhere? Take a walk around. There's bunnies and eggs everywhere. Yeah, just a little bit co-opted there, literally.
But it's all the kind of non-celebratory Christians who are going for that stuff.
Non-celebratory?
Yeah, you don't have to go off to church to have Easter eggs or Christmas
presents. Oh,
no,
that's true. And jelly beans, which
right.
I love.
Yeah, jelly beans are good.
Licorice jelly beans, especially.
Okay, well, onward and upward to the news. President Bush yesterday took a moment while pootling around Crawford to call his national security adviser, Condoleezza Rice, and he congratulated her on her testimony before the panel investigating September 11th. What a lovely boss. It's not clear, though, whether he was congratulating her on giving the panel and our nation a better understanding of why his administration did not prevent the September 11th attacks or on her attempts to limit his accountability. One such attempt came in an exchange with Commission member Richard Benveniste, ex-Watergate prosecutor, after the title of an August 6, 2001 presidential briefing was revealed.
Isn't it a fact, Dr. Rice, that the August 6th PDB warned against possible attacks in this country? And I ask you whether you recall the title of that PDB.
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States. The
thank
PDB,
you.
No, Mr. Benveniste, you...
I will get into the...
I would like to finish my point here.
I didn't know there
given
was
that
a point.
You asked me whether or not it warned of attacks.
I asked you what the title was.
You said, did it not warn of attacks? It did not warn of attacks inside the United States. It was historical information based on old reporting. There was no new threat information.
Well, Rice avoided the question of whether some measures might have prevented the September 11th attacks and stuck fast to the idea that no measures were guaranteed to stop them. It was a concept she repeated several times, almost as if she had been given, well, a set of bullet points.
Yet, as your hearings have shown, there was no silver bullet that could have prevented the 9/11 attacks.
Ooh, that hurt.
It was not going to be a silver bullet. Kill Bin Laden. I don't agree that we know that we had somehow a silver bullet.
Ow.
There was no silver bullet. A silver bullet. A silver bullet.
That's the werewolf being
killed. There goes Lon Chaney.
Okay, PDB. I guess it's missing, rather like WMD, right?
Wasn't that a Lone Ranger thing, too? Silver bullet?
No, that was the name of his
silver.
Horse.
That was the horse.
Right.
No, he didn't use silver bullet.
I'm willing to argue. He left a silver bullet at the scene. He did,
yeah.
Yes. I'm willing to argue that there was an entire box of silver bullets. I just think they were in the cabinet behind where they were hanging the Iraq plans, you know, on the wall. I just think that they just didn't realize that they were in there. They didn't notice that they had a big box of fresh silver bullets because,
hey.
I think we got Joe Lockhart on the phone, don't we? He's coming to us from Washington, D.C. He was President Clinton's press secretary from 1998 to 2001. He is a CNBC political analyst. Are you there, Joe?
I am here.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good morning.
So,
hello.
What do you think of Dr. Rice's testimony?
Well, it was a tour de force in not revealing any information and not taking any responsibility for anything.
He just avoided everything, just what he tried to offer.
I mean, I think they went into this and they decided that the best thing they could do was get her in and get her out. They had no interest, as we all know, in having her testify. They had no interest in having this commission. This is an administration that has no interest in anyone scrutinizing anything they do.
It's a trickle-down blame thing.
Yeah, well, I think from their point of view, I'm sure they're quite happy. They got in and out of it. There wasn't, you know, the country hasn't taken to the streets this morning, demanding some change.
It's early.
Friday.
It's still early.
It's still Friday, yeah, and it is Easter weekend. So,
Joe, do you think that she changed anybody's minds at all?
Well, no, I don't really think so. I think that the hardcore Republicans in this country, she could get up there and say, you know, we were on vacation and that's what we should have been doing, and they would say that's fine. I think the hardcore Democrats probably didn't look at this with an open mind. I think most importantly, if you look at this in terms of the election, the people who are going to decide this election, the swing voters, the people in the middle, she really disappointed those people yesterday, because her basic message was, if there was a problem, it was someone else's fault, and if there was information out there, it wasn't my job to take any action on it. I mean, she if you listen closely, when she was presented with any real information, her answer was always, well, what did you want me to do about it? Someone didn't tell me what they were going to do and when they were going to do it. And it's not the traditional role of the National Security Advisor to sit and read memos and wait for people to tell her things.
Important point. Joe Lockhart's going to stay with us, and so should you. We're going to take your phone calls at 866-303-AARZERO. That's 866-303-2270. When we come back on Air America Radio.
Air America Radio. A loyal opposition.
Grab a pen and write it down. www.baseballcoach1.com. This is the premier website for youth baseball coaches. Now you can get the best drills for your child or your team with a 59-minute baseball practice video. This is the number one instructional baseball tool today. Included are hitting drills, fielding drills, base running drills, pitching, and more. Over 30 creative drills. The 59-minute baseball practice video has been recommended by the National Alliance of Youth Sports, the largest amateur coaches organization in the world. Go to www.baseballcoach1.com now to purchase the best-selling sports video in the country. Order now and you'll receive two free bonus reports, a written pitch count report which explains the recommended number of pitches a youth pitcher should throw in a game, plus a second bonus, five written sample practices right from the video. The 59-minute baseball practice video, only $24.95 plus shipping. The 59-minute baseball practice video is available on Amazon, but for your two free bonus reports, go to www.baseballcoach1.com.
Sarah, we'll have to move the piano. Mom's just not going to be able to get around in that room.
I know, in the kitchen. What do we do with the stove and knives and all that stuff that could be dangerous?
Yeah, what about the locks on the doors, too, so she can't wander out? I sure wish there was someplace to call to find out what else we should do.
Me too.
If you're caring for a loved one who's suffering from Alzheimer's disease, there is something you can do to get more information. The National Institute on Aging has prepared a kit, especially for caregivers of Alzheimer's patients. You can get the free caregiver's kit just by calling 1-800-438-4380. It'll show you how to make your house safer for someone with Alzheimer's disease. Just call 1-800-438-4380.
There are so many questions. How will we ever make her feel at home?
Don't forget us, David. We'll be affected, too.
Call 1-800-438-4380 for your free caregiver's kit. This is a service of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
The Public Theater in New York presents a play written and directed by Tim Robbins. Embedded.
A savagely witty, very smart, very screwball, and ultimately very chilling comedy.
San Francisco Chronicle.
Embedded.
Wildly entertaining. You'll find more truth about war on this stage than you'll find in most newspapers.
BBC.
Embedded.
Poisonous.
Who's that from?
The New Republic.
Whoa.
Embedded.
Savagely witty and incisive, uncompromising.
LA Times.
Embedded.
Swift, savage, sharply clever lampoon.
New York Star Ledger.
Embedded.
Bad taste.
Who's that from?
Fox News.
Whoa.
Embedded.
Excellent, timely, and compellingly cutting satire, a tribute to the finest traditions of drama and political comedy.
Democracy Now.
Embedded by Tim Robbins at the Public Theater.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
Randy Rhodes.
They love me like crazy in this Republican red state. Why? Because they knew the world was not watching. You had James A. Baker III, who now represents the Saudi royal family, against the families of September 11th, standing on television, lying that our votes were counted. Our votes were never counted.
Randy Rhodes, afternoons 3 to 7 on Air America Radio.
We'll be right back.
Ellicott with Mark Riley and Mark Maron on Air America. With us by phone today is Joe Lockhart, former press secretary to President Clinton from 98 to 2001 and now a CNBC political analyst. Joe, your ex-boss, President Clinton, testified on Capitol Hill yesterday behind closed doors to the 9/11 Commission. What did he tell them?
Well, I think I'm sure he spent most of the time answering questions about sort of the evolution of the threat, what the government did, what the government didn't do. I can guarantee you it was a more enlightening session.
Probably a good show, too, right?
And there were more facts displayed by the former president in his session than what we saw from the National Security Advisor.
How can you guarantee that?
Because I watched for 2 hours yesterday in Ms. Rice's testimony, and I learned more from the questions than I did from the answers.
So if he
went in and sort of just put his name in the record, he told the commission more.
But what do you think he would have said to their questions that, you know, you slipped up too, didn't you?
Oh, I think there's no question that one of the differences is that President Clinton has gone and told anyone who will listen that we could have done more and we should have done more. There were serious problems that we tried to face. Some things we did worked. We foiled several terrorist attempts. Some things we tried didn't work. We didn't have the kind of cooperation we needed around the world. But there isn't, I can assure you that there wasn't a sense of going in and the president saying, we did everything we could, this is absolutely not the government's responsibility. Because he wouldn't say that because he doesn't believe that.
Our number is 1-866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. Before we go to the phones, Joe Lockhart, how did the Clinton White House deal with the kind of increased intelligence chatter that we heard the Bush White House had to deal with just before September 11th?
Well, I mean, this is actually something that I have some firsthand knowledge on, and I couldn't disagree more with Dr. Rice and her assessment. We had very serious intelligence upticks as we led into the millennium. There was all sorts of information running around. And again, it's not the kind of information where someone gave us a call and said, it's going to happen at this time in this place, and this is how we're going to do it. It's not the way the world works. And the entire government at the most senior levels, including the President of the United States, mobilized to try to stop that. And I used to go downstairs two or three times a day in the week leading up to the millennium and have the entire cabinet sitting down, or the relevant cabinet members sitting downstairs in the Situation Room. The President was engaged. Mr. Clark was leading a very aggressive effort. And you know what? That episode shows that when you do shake the trees, which has become the term of art here, from the top, you get results. So the idea that the people at the White House should sit there and wait for the FBI to tell them what's going on, I think is a flawed concept.
You're right. That shake the tree thing was said over and over. I had that Peter Gabriel song rattling around my head.
And I know it sort of trivializes this, but I can tell you something. When the head of the FBI and the head of the CIA are told by the president, go back and check every place, and I want you to report back to me in 4 hours, That makes a difference, and it makes a difference all the way through the organization. And if somebody had been shaking the tree at the FBI, maybe some of that information that the FBI knew at lower levels would have trickled up.
Mm. Okay, Joe, we're going to go to a caller on the line. We have Seema.
Seema, are you there?
Westchester. Seema, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay, good. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Listen, I had a question. I'm really surprised why nobody on the panel yesterday questioned Dr. Rice about the fact that she was supposed to give a talk on September 11th. And if she claims that they were so on top of this thing about the terrorists and dangers facing the America, why didn't she mention anything about Bin Laden or Al-Qaeda in that speech?
Okay.
Thank you very much for
asking that question. Joe?
Well, listen, I think the most damning thing that Dick Clark said, and everyone's all caught up in could we prevented September 11th or not, I think the most damning thing he said, and that's a good question, was his critique of the overall foreign policy, which is a bunch of the old-time Cold War warriors came in and were determined to deal with the world like it hadn't changed in 8 years during the Clinton administration. And it's very clear from both public statements, from this speech that was never given, and from the actions of this administration that they believed that the threat still came from the Russians and that we needed a missile defense, and the threat still came from Saddam Hussein in Iraq. We've now found that he had no weapons of mass destruction and was off writing novels rather than threatening Americans on American soil.
Which is pretty criminal, too. The novels are horrible.
Yeah, and so the fact is they didn't think this was a real threat. I mean, Sandy Berger sat across the table from Condi Rice and said, you're going to spend more time on terrorism than any other issue. You will become obsessed with it. It is the threat to our country and the world. And she looked at him and said, Sandy, you're wrong.
Joe Lockhart, we're going to go to another caller in a minute, but I'll just give out the number one more time. 1-866-303-AAR0. That's 1-866-303-2270. We're going to go to Fred in Brooklyn. Hi, Fred.
Fred.
He's coming. Hey, Fred?
Yes.
How are you doing, buddy?
How are you?
First of all, let me compliment you all. I haven't turned my television on since you guys came on air. I just absolutely love listening to you.
Oh, thank you.
Do you have power over there in Brooklyn?
Excuse me?
Do you have power?
Yes, we have power.
Okay. Do you have a question for Joe Lockhart, Clinton's press secretary?
Yeah, comment and a question here. Condoleezza Rice, admitting yesterday that she could not remember if she told the president about Al-Qaeda cells in the United States. How insulting, proof of her incompetence. Why are we not demanding her resignation? We're constantly hearing them defend themselves.
Fred, demand it. I'll demand it right now. I demand that Condi Rice resign.
Thank you.
You bet.
Joe, how plausible, a good point that Fred makes, how plausible was it that Condoleezza Rice did not remember, I didn't remember, she said, if I mentioned Al-Qaeda to the president or not?
Well, I think it's quite plausible because I don't think she thought this was a big deal. This is the National Security Advisor who, on the issue of Iraq and weapons of mass destruction, had to admit that she didn't read the entire National Intelligence Estimate. This is something that she's supposed to sign off on.
But is this serious enough? Do you think she should actually resign now?
Oh, I don't. Listen, I don't think that she in herself is a problem. Is the problem, and her resigning solves the problem. I mean, I think the good news is we're only a few months away from an election, and we're going to be able to get the whole group to resign en masse.
Can I ask you a question, Joe, about do you think that the Republicans' constant investigative assault on Clinton for all those years diminished his ability to deal with anything?
No, I don't think so. Here's where I think there may have been a negative contribution. I mean, there was only about 1% of the senior level government dealing with the investigative assault. Everybody else was free to do their job. I think where there was a problem is, President Clinton was somewhat obsessed with Al-Qaeda terrorism, this new threat, and went around the country and talked about it constantly, gave speeches at the UN, and it never really got out there because as a country, the media, whoever, whose fault it is doesn't matter, was obsessed with things that now seem awfully silly in hindsight. So I think there was an impact. I think obviously that whole thing didn't start on its own. He has his responsibility to take for this. But as far as the actual work being done within the intelligence agencies, within the FBI, I don't think there was an impact.
Joe, just on a lighter note, you have worked for a guy who had hair problems. Why are American men going on about Rice's hair? Don't you think it's irrelevant?
Rice's hair?
Yes. Hmm. I didn't need one American man to say we don't care about her hair.
We don't care about her hair.
Excellent.
I'm an American man.
Thank you.
All right.
But I don't think she needs to resign.
All right. Joe Lockhart, thank you so much for being with us.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe.
Have a good weekend and happy Easter.
Bye.
Now it's time for the Morning Sedition Business Report. There are exciting developments and profit opportunities on the horizon in the wedding industry. According to Forbes magazine, if laws were changed to legalize gay marriages, these same gay dudes would collectively pump $16.8 billion into the already swollen wedding industry.
Define pump.
Caterers, jewelers, travel agents, and Methodist churches will be among the many industries expected to reap dividends. But few companies show higher growth potential in the gay marriages boom than Man Toppers Incorporated, the largest manufacturer of gay wedding cake figurines. Man Toppers produces a full line of tiny plastic gay couples to fit the wedding cake needs of every conceivable coupling. From the classic two clean cut men in tuxedos to the master and zipper mask slave coupling. If you're a chunky biker who's trying to tie the knot, who's tying the knot with a black man in a ball gown, Man Toppers has what you need for your cake. Studies show the average cost of a traditional wedding is approximately $10,000. According to the last national census, there are 590,000 homosexual couples living together, and that's a lot of frosting. And flowers and rings and erasure cover bands. So don't miss out on this opportunity to cash in on the gay wedding boom. This has been the Morning Sedition Business Report.
Jobs for everyone.
I think
absolutely.
That one.
Coming up, is the Empire State ready for an end to marriage? Plus, can a Supreme Court justice make you erase a tape? But up next, Flint Leverett talks about his former boss, the aforementioned Condoleezza Rice. That's just on the other side of news headlines.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. A halt to offensive operations in the Iraqi city of Fallujah didn't last very long. The U.S. Marine Commander says the Marines have gotten the go-ahead to resume operations in the besieged city, apparently after negotiations involving local officials fell through. Streets in Baghdad are quiet today, a year after U.S. Marines surrounded the cheering Iraqis, pulled down a large statue of Saddam Hussein in the center of the Iraqi capital. The event marked the oust of the Iraqi dictator. A new poll indicates neither President Bush nor Democrat John Kerry has gained an advantage despite spending millions of dollars on advertising. The Associated Press poll puts Bush's support, that is, by 45%, with 44% for Kerry. Independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader gets 6%. Those figures are essentially unchanged from polls last month. And finally, we can tell you a woman who killed two of her sons and maimed a third believed one of the boys would rise from the dead after her arrest last summer. Dallas Morning News reports when he didn't, she began taking antipsychotic medication. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
All of a sudden, out of nowhere,
Air America,
boom,
radio.
There's body parts, there's blood, there's chaos. There was this large flame that just covered at least 100 meters in every direction. Devastating scene. Men died.
Hey, W. Preempt this.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. Here for RAD. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastic to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
I'm Mark Riley with Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron here on Air America Radio. Our next guest is also going to critique Condoleezza Rice's testimony, but from a very interesting perspective. She used to be his boss. It is a pleasure to welcome to our microphones here at Air America, former National Security Council advisor, now a fellow at the Brookings Institution, Mr. Flint Leverett. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Hello.
Good to be with you.
Now, let me ask you right off the top. Was the Condoleezza Rice that you saw testifying yesterday the same woman you worked for?
Oh, yes.
I thought that certainly the public persona was very much consistent with what I'd seen before. And, you know, I don't think Condi is that much different in private than she is in a public setting like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you worked at the State Department under Colin Powell. You moved to the White House in 2002 to work for Condoleezza Rice. You were one of the people that was instrumental in trying to draft the roadmap for peace between Israel and the Palestinians. You told Sidney Blumenthal, because we spoke to him the other day, that it didn't seem as though the neoconservatives inside the Bush White House were really all that helpful in trying to get that roadmap done.
Well, that's something of an understatement. There were certainly powerful people associated with the Vice President's office, with the Office of the Secretary of Defense, in some other parts of the National Security Council apparatus, who didn't want there to be a roadmap to start with, who, once the President had made the determination that there would be a roadmap, didn't want it to be a very strong or effective document, and who lobbied very hard at the end of 2002, even though we promised all our European allies, our moderate Arab partners, we had promised to put it out in advance of the Iraq War. They managed to keep it from being put out, and it really didn't come out in a way until it was too little too late.
When you hear Condoleezza Rice saying, in fact, that the White House really did not have adequate information about the possibility of a terrorist attack around September 11th, why should people not believe her, or should they?
Well, I think you can certainly argue that the intelligence could have been better, but there's also a problem which I don't think she dealt with particularly effectively yesterday, and that is that there were pieces of information in different parts of the United States government that if they had ever been brought to the table in one place, perhaps we could have connected enough of the dots to know more about what was going to happen, and that might have given us a chance to prevent the 9/11 attacks.
But why weren't those pieces put together? Are these different government agencies feuding? What's the problem?
Well, there are still problems with communication between government agencies, the sort of classic problem of the FBI not really being able to share information or willing to share information with the CIA. But I think that Richard Clark made a very effective point in his testimony before the commission that in the Clinton administration before the millennium, you had daily principals committee meetings. You had National Security Advisor Sandy Berger making cabinet-level officers come in every day, and those cabinet-level officers knew they had to bring something to put on the table. And that's what energizes a bureaucracy, having that boss go back to Langley or go back to the FBI or go back to wherever he is head and tell people who work for him, I need something to take to that meeting tomorrow. That's what shakes things loose, and that's what enabled us to thwart the Millennium attacks. If that had been done before September 11, could we have stopped the 9/11 attack? We can't say that for sure, but I think Richard Clark made a very, very good point on that, and I don't think that Dr. Rice was particularly effective in responding to it.
Flint Leverett, Condoleezza Rice was your boss before you left the White House, thinking that the Bush administration just didn't get it.
I'm sorry.
Uh-oh.
Flint?
Hello? Oops. Cell phone dropout. He's coming back, though. You there, Flint?
Hello?
Hi.
We got you back again.
Flint Leverett, Condoleezza Rice was your
boss.
Yeah,
can you hear us? Hello? See, now the
gun. Hello, I'm here.
Oh, good, good, good. Now, are you there, Flint? You there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good, good. See, they have that new weird thing, the administration, where they know when people are talking bad about them, they shut their phones up.
You would be even more convinced of that if you knew that just as a little blackout, I was driving past CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia.
Really?
Oh,
that's
okay.
Very interesting. Either that, or he says that he was driving past CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, and isn't it an interesting coincidence that his phone seemed to be cutting out?
There are no coincidences.
No, conspiracies, coincidences. Can you hear us now, Flint?
He obviously got caught in the cone of silence.
Yeah. But I want to ask you when he comes back that Condoleezza Rice had said that, you know, that she had identified as early as January 2001 that there are problems with these agencies, intelligence agencies, failing to communicate or feuding or competing with one another. So he worked under her. And when he comes back, I want to ask him what she was doing about it, if anything.
Wasn't this the whole Homeland Security idea, though, that they were going to bring all those agencies together?
Idea. You're absolutely right. That was the idea. And I don't know why it didn't happen. Flit, are you back with us?
Yes, I am. Oh. Sorry for the interruption.
That's okay. All right. Send those little green men away.
Yes. Are you on a secure line, Flint?
That's right.
I just want to ask you that what you think that Condoleezza Rice was doing, if anything, to address problems with the intelligence agencies not communicating sufficiently well with one another, because she identified that as a problem back in January 2001.
Yes, that's right. And before September 11, it would seem that not a lot was done toward that.
Okay.
My understanding is that since the September 11 attacks, there have been some notable improvements in the ability of the intelligence agencies and law enforcement agencies to talk to one another and share information. But I think, you know, we really haven't had any significant structural change in the intelligence community since the September 11 attacks. And I can't help but think that to some degree those structural problems are still there until you actually change the structure.
But what simple thing could they do? What would be the best thing to do?
I think you have to make sure that you have some central location where both foreign intelligence collectors and domestic law enforcement at the federal level come together and pool information. There needs to be a central location, a central place where that domestic and foreign threat information is put on the table all together in one place.
Hey, I need to ask you, Flint, about, you know, I read, we talked to Sidney Blumenthal, and I've been called a conspiracy theorist, but just, you know, how much power does the Zionist Christian right have in deciding policy?
Well, I think that the what people sometimes refer to as the Christian right, that is a very important constituency for this administration. It's really very much a part of the core base of support for this administration, and there's a real reluctance to do anything in terms of policy that is going to alienate or cause difficulties for that constituency, and it certainly had an impact in decision-making on policy toward the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
In what way specifically, what were their issues with the roadmap, the Christian right issues?
Well, I think even before the roadmap was advanced, when we were making decisions about what the president was going to lay out in his vision for a two-state solution, the whole idea of, you know, should we talk about final status issues? Should we say something about how you would negotiate final borders? Should we say something about the status of Jerusalem? All of those issues were completely put aside in the president's speech and in the roadmap, because we didn't want to give, in the end, the administration didn't want to give offense to Christian evangelicals and others.
They didn't want you to get in the way of the second coming.
Well, I don't know that I can really speak to their agenda, but that was definitely a consideration that we would be at risk of alienating some core constituents.
Well, thanks for answering me.
Let me ask you this: did you see anything or hear anything from Condoleezza Rice that you felt was patently untrue?
A big outright lie, in other words.
No, I don't think that that would be fair to say. I thought Dick Clark said it very well when he was testifying, and someone tried to bait him on this subject. Was he, you know, was he lying before? Was he lying now? And he said something very well, that people in Washington will make certain emphases, will not emphasize other things, will basically spin a presentation in order to put the bad face on things from their perspective. And I think she was certainly doing a good deal of that yesterday, but I certainly wouldn't accuse her of, you know, deliberate falsehood.
So she did a good job for the president, in other words.
She is always a very polished public presenter for the administration. The real key is, though, is what is the substance of what she said, and has she really answered the criticisms of this administration's handling of the terrorism issue that have been made by Richard Clark and many others?
Final quick yes or no question. You're in the private sector. You're working for Brookings. Would you ever go back to work in government?
I still maintain a very deep interest in foreign policy and public service. And if the right opportunity came along, I would seriously consider going back into public service at some point.
Flint Leverett, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend. Don't go away. We've got so much more, including Queer Eye for the Straight Woman and Mark Maron's Morning Devotional. This is Air America Radio. Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
And then I woke up.
Air America Radio.
Wait. And then I woke up.
No, Mr. Rose. You're not just having a nightmare.
In the corner, weighing several tons, is the challenger, Your House. And in the red corner, weighing next to nothing, the undisputed champion of the world, Wildfire.
Well, this should be quite a monumental battle.
Yes, it should, bud.
Oh, there's the bell. Oh, Wildfire just charged out of that corner like a wildfire.
Yeah, but it can't seem to get anywhere near House.
That's because House's landscape is water-retaining plants, which help keep Wildfire at a safe distance.
And, bud, check out how Wildfire's punches seem to roll off that treated shingle roof.
Holy smokes, Lou! Wildfire is wearing out like a cheap suit. Oh, Wildfire is down!
Down and out.
Can your house win a fight with wildfire? Visit firewise.org to find out how you can help make your home more defensible against wildfires. That's firewise.org, a public service brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Hello.
Hello. This is Danny Glover.
Danny Glover?
I'm giving a wake-up call to every man in America. Mr. Johnson, did you know that at every age, American men have poorer health and a higher risk of mortality than women? Men experience higher instances of death due to hypertension, cancer, stress, HIV, and depression. As a matter of fact, men live sicker and die sooner from all but one of the leading causes of death. We take more risks, handle stress differently, and are less likely to schedule checkups or to follow up when symptoms arise. If you really want to be a man and take care of your family, you can start by taking care of yourself. So schedule an appointment with a doctor and find out what might go wrong before it does.
I'll call today. And thank you.
You're welcome.
For more information, contact the W.K. Kellogg Foundation at WKKF.org.
Introducing Venture Magazine, the progressive voice for the next generation of market makers. Hi, I'm Kevin Halloran, publisher of Venture, the magazine of risk and reward, where opportunity is seized on every page and where new ideas spring to life. For a free trial issue of Venture, call 866-MY-ISSUE and learn how Samsung steps into the cool as a serious threat to Sony, or how the hidden wealth of Vietnam may fuel the best investment opportunity of the year. In this issue of Venture, you'll discover the emergence of nanotechnology and separate science fact from fiction. Experience intimacy in the City of Angels at the Frank Gehry Design Disney Hall and enjoy the new American splendor. For those who have achieved, those who desire to succeed, and those who dream, Venture is your magazine. Call 866-MY-ISSUE to start your subscription or learn about employment, investment, and partnership opportunities. And remember, in business and in life, always venture.
Air America's Morning Sedition. Weekdays 6 to 9, Unfiltered. Weekdays 9 to noon, The Old Franken Factor. Weekdays noon to 3, Randy Rose. Afternoons 3 to 7, So What Else Is New. Evenings 7 to 8, The Majority Report. Weeknights 8 to 11 on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron with Sue Elcott and Mark Riley here on Air America's Morning Sedition. And we are going out on 1190 AM WLIB in New York, 1580 AM KBLA in Los Angeles, 950 AM WNTD in Chicago.
Rock guy, I got to ask you something.
Yeah.
What's the name of that song we just heard?
We just heard, you asked Board Guy.
Board Guy.
Chris.
Our
man.
Our what
man.
Was that song?
There by Radiohead.
Oh,
Radiohead. That dude's deep.
I like it.
I like Radiohead a lot. Did you know we're going out to Portland, Oregon, too, on 620 AM, KPOJ, in Portland, Oregon?
No, I didn't.
Big nice? Radio town. Huge.
Radiohead town, too?
It's a groove. Yeah, definitely a Radiohead
Didn't Johnny town. Cash cover a Radiohead song?
Yeah, he covered a lot of songs. At the end, you know, Rick Rubin just used to say, "Hey, Johnny, come on, will you do Happy Birthday?" hey, Johnny. Johnny, wake up. Here's the ABCs. Do ABCs. Come on. Hey, John.
Chris knows. I know he knows. Because I could have sworn that he covered a Radiohead song.
Hey, Johnny, do you know Mary Had a Little Lamb? Come on.
I would have bought that. If Johnny Cash did the Times Tables, I wouldn't mind playing that.
Oh, he would have. If he just lived a little longer, that'd Rick Rubin would have had him do a children's album.
Parents,
no doubt.
Parents need that, K through 2.
A, B, G, D, E. Hey, what day is it? Johnny was the best. I don't mean to mock a
he's
legend.
He's the only country guy and, I really was into.
Oh, he's great. There's a lot of, you're not into Merle Haggard?
And Burns. No.
Oh,
not even Charlie Pride. I couldn't Charlie Pride.
Sappy, but, you know, George Jones kicked. Merle Haggard, come on.
You know what, that's quite funny, because Johnny Cash was, sang so much from a kind of, Christian perspective.
God rest his soul.
About Jesus and God that... I'm surprised you like him that much.
Well, Johnny Cash, early on, did not sing from a Christian perspective. He sang from the people's perspective. That was when he was a strung-out Benny addict and he was taking 70 pills a day. Then he happened to run into a woman who changed the course of his life by introducing him to God. But at that point, he was tired and he had given up and he was ready to surrender.
You mean he was defenseless?
Yeah,
she
in a way.
Him when
right?
Defenseless
he needed help.
Low. But he
and I'm
was
open to
really
that.
The acceptable face of God in music, I think.
Well, the country music has a lot of God, and I'm willing to make some exceptions. I'm open to being enlightened. If you can do it, can you do it? Come on, Sue.
I don't know. I'm
wake
the one, Mark.
Up.
I don't know.
Wake
I think you found the one. It's not me. Don't worry.
All right. Wake me. How about you, Mark? Can you wake me up spiritually? Come on.
Spiritually?
Come on. Give it to me.
Here's what I got for you. I got something for you.
Yeah?
I want you to watch. There's a Columbo episode that starred Johnny Cash.
I thought you were going to say, you want religion? There's a Columbo episode that will change your life.
That's right. Because Johnny Cash played the wife, the husband, I'm sorry, of this evangelist.
That one was banned.
Yeah. No, he played the husband of this evangelist, and he killed her by jumping out of an airplane, and the plane crashed, and she died, and Columbo went after him and finally got him. And when it was all over, he said he had peace of mind because he had confessed to the murder.
Yeah, well, Johnny was he's a deep dude and a great artist. And also,
that didn't convert you?
It did. That's why I'm pausing. Something's happening in my heart. We have an interesting story about the Antonin Scalia, stopping recording. I don't know if he stopped it, but during this speech that he was giving in high school, at a high school in, I think, where was the high school? Do you remember?
I don't remember where the high school was, but...
Here we go.
Wait a minute. He was in Mississippi
High School.
How did I know that?
And during it, this is the great thing. During it, some sort of stooge, some sort of,
federal marshal.
A Supreme Court federal marshal stooge guy walks over to the front row where a reporter has a tape recorder and takes and asks her to erase it. But in front of all these kids, they're like,
"Give me the tape."
This is how the court works.
That's right.
You know, and now there are legal analysts that say it may have been unconstitutional.
May have been. I mean, Fourth Estate, freedom of speech, reporters. I think it's really interesting how this Republican government feels it can intimidate not just journalists from local media, but people in general. I think Americans are decent. They're trusting. They're generally non-combative.
And
you go up to someone from the Hattiesburg American newspaper. and tell her to turn off her tape machine, and just to be pleasant and decent, she's going to say yes.
The Hattiesburg American.
They actually confiscated the tape machine, and to me, just a display of that. If I were a high school kid sitting there in that auditorium waiting to hear the Supreme Court justice talk about the Constitution, and right at the beginning, you know, he just said, snapped his fingers. I don't know if he did that, but, like, he's about to talk, and he noticed the tape recorders, and he just snapped his fingers, and bam! The cop was, I did an emerald, bam! The cop was on the reporter, right in front of the kids. How would that influence how you look at how the government works in this country?
Well, they're going to end up being a high school class full of censors is what's going to end up happening.
I don't know. How many kids were really riveted that Justice Scalia was coming to talk to them in the first place?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think if I were in high school.
I can't imagine Mark Maron as a 15-year-old dying to hear a Supreme Court judge.
Scalia!
What are you kidding? And me as a 15-year-old, in New Mexico,
yeah, right?
Where I grew up, you could drive at 15. So, you know, any opportunity to get off campus, whether it was during class, during lunch, we would take it.
I like the fact that one of these federal deputy marshals who came up and told the woman to turn off her tape recorder was called Melanie Rube.
Yeah.
Rube, good name.
Ironic.
Ironic or...
I like the word rube.
But you know what? There's something going on here, isn't there? That kind of journalists obviously feel this kind of pressure and this distrust, and that they're not even assertive enough. There's something going on in this country that journalists know that they are kind of vilified up there with lawyers. Anybody who's on a local newspaper with kind of basic journalistic training, and I say that from someone who went through journalist school, has to know that nobody has the right to make you, after the event, turn off your tape machine.
But it's Supreme Court justice.
Or to take your notes away. But it was just his preference.
It's that scene from The Godfather.
He just doesn't like someone recording. I mean, you're allowed to take notes, apparently, when you're around.
Like I said yesterday, I know dude's got the bootleg, and it's excellent. He also has some good Jerry Garcia stuff. He's got Jerry just sleeping. He's got some Garcia stuff.
Need a website. You could be selling all this stuff, Mark.
It's that first Godfather.
What do they teach you in journalist school? What is the main principle of being a journalist?
Get it right.
Get it right.
Get it
and
right.
Also unbiased.
Spell correctly.
Is it unbiased?
Shorthand.
As well? Shorthand.
No. Bias doesn't really matter.
Bias doesn't matter in journalist
Fair.
School?
Read the papers.
Well, I am reading the papers, and here's another story. They're going to make a queer eye.
Mark Riley.
What?
I can't let that pass up.
What? Look at the Post. Look at today's New York Post.
Is that journalism?
Is that journalism?
I wouldn't say so.
A lot of people went to journalism school to get there.
I don't know about that.
Oh, no, trust me.
Here's some important information from the newspaper that I read in the entertainment section, that they're going to have a queer eye for women. Like, the queer eye guys are going to tell women how to dress and what to do and what to put on their walls and
Mary.
How to cook properly. How's that going to pan out?
Didn't Sex in the City already tell us that? All we need is high heels and cleavage?
I just wonder if it's going to work, because the great thing about the queer eye for the straight guy is that you get these poor gloves that you actually kind of feel bad for. I find it to be very touching. I hope that's not admitting anything weird about myself. But if the guy is a loser enough, I like watching Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. I don't know if I'll like it with a woman who's can't clean up her house, or there's pubic hair all over her bathroom. I don't know.
Shouldn't there be gay women telling straight women how to dress? The kind of lipstick lesbians?
That'd be really helpful. put on the Harley
but
shirt.
That would be much more entertaining.
That would be a much
funnier reality
It'd
show.
Be hilarious, actually.
You
I
can
agree
have
with
like the lipstick lesbian and the very dykey.
It's time now. Time now. Time now for the morning.
Hey, I'd watch that.
Yeah, I would watch it too, especially if they, All right, time now for the morning devotional. Each day. Oh yeah, I'm sorry, Mark. Here we go. Each day on Morning Sedition, we join hands and humbly ask the Heavenly Father for His guidance in the coming day. Yesterday, Condoleezza Rice testified about an intelligence briefing for the president entitled Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States. And as anyone who watched TV around September 11, 2001 knows, that memo didn't have much of an effect. Pretty embarrassing for George. Some might say he was sleeping on his watch. Others might say he was completely incompetent. But he's still our president. That's why today's morning devotion was on behalf of George W. Bush. Please, let us bow our heads. Dear Lord, what the hell is going on up there? I mean, come on. I mean, how could you let word of that report get out? I mean, this whole sort of hasten the apocalypse thing is a two-way street, buddy. Bush can't do it all on his own. He's doing your work on Earth. You got to do your work up there. A little help, all right? That's all we're asking, okay? Jesus. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory in a world without end. We ask this through Christ our Lord. Amen. This has been our morning devotional. Very powerful. Powerful message.
Lots of passion today, Mark.
Yeah. Full of passion.
Lots of energy for Good Friday.
Especially when you got to the Jesus part.
Yeah.
That was wonderful.
It's burning.
In the next hour on Morning's Edition, the latest from Iraq and New York Times columnist Paul Krugman, and of course, an extra special recovery corner, courtesy of Mark Maron. But first, the latest news.
A message from the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. Beginning Monday, April 19th, both New Jersey-bound lanes on the Goffles Bridge will be closed overnight for deck rehabilitation, Monday through Friday from 9:30 p.m. to 5 a.m., and Saturday and Sunday from midnight to 8 a.m. All lanes will be open on Sunday nights and holiday weekends. Travelers are advised to use the Bayonne Bridge or Outer Bridge crossing. Bridge work, which will continue through early November, is weather-sensitive and may be canceled due to heavy rain. For daily updates, please call 1-800-221-9903.
Welcome to Tape 5, The Backpack. Let's say your child comes home from high school. They did something good. It's time to give them The Backpack. Now you try The Backpack. That's it. And pat, pat, pat.
It's really not that difficult. Encourage them. Get them to graduate. Don't drop out on your kids. For a free brochure, call 877-4KID. That's 877-F-O-R-A-K-I-D. This message brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
You're listening to 1190 WLIP New York, the home of Air America Radio.
In the next hour, Morning's Edition here on Air America Radio, U.S. forces reclaim a town in Iraq, but the insurgents still have hostages. Plus, we'll talk to Paul Krugman from the New York Times about President Bush's record on Iraq and the truth. But first, here are the headlines at this hour.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The deadly fight for control of the Iraqi city of Fallujah between U.S. coalition forces and the insurgents continues after a midday break. Violence escalated after purported peace talks with a delegation of Sunni Muslim sheikhs fell apart. Still unknown is what led to that impasse, but one U.S. Marine commander believes the negotiations never really took place. Associated Press correspondent Lourdes Navarro says the situation in Fallujah remains volatile. She adds the Marines there were trained for a humanitarian mission.
The Marines have basically been training for a humanitarian mission. A lot of them took Arabic classes sponsored by the military. They engaged in cultural sensitivity training, and now they find themselves in the midst of a very large battle here in Fallujah. And some are expressing reservations about after this battle is over, how exactly they're going to engage with the people of Fallujah.
Associated Press reporter Lourdes Navarro. Concerns are rising over the safety of three Japanese nationals, including a journalist who were kidnapped by Iraqi insurgents. The rebel leaders are demanding that Japan and South Korea withdraw their troops from Iraq. Those abducted are facing a Sunday deadline before they are threatened to be burned alive. Vice President Dick Cheney is gearing up to meet with the leaders of Japan and South Korea next week, where he's expected to ask personally to resist the pressure from the kidnappers. AP correspondent Steve Herman is in Japan in preparation for Cheney's visit with government leaders about the Iraqi rebel threat.
The hostage crisis is now expected to be at the top of the Japanese government's agenda for the Cheney visit this weekend, with political observers here saying the prime minister will put strong pressure on the vice president to get U.S. forces in Iraq to do their utmost to locate and free the three Japanese.
AP correspondent Steve Herman. A National Security Council spokesman says the White House is working on a request from the 9/11 Commission. The panel wants a classified document declassified. Word of the request came the same day the National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice testified before that panel.
Come on, honey. Come to daddy. That's right. Stand up. Oh, she's standing. Here she comes out. Take that first step. Come on. Take the first step. No, wait.
Where will you be when your diarrhea comes back?
Oh, no. Don't move. Hold my clothes. I'll be right back.
Where are you going?
You should have taken Imodium the first time. It works, often in just one dose.
Honey! Oh, you're such a good girl. Honey!
Imodium AD. Don't wait till it's too late. Use only as directed.
Honey, she's walking.
Oh, that's nice.
In this corner, weighing several tons, the challenger, your house. And in the red corner, weighing next to nothing, the undisputed champion of the world, Wildfire.
Think your house can win the fight? Visit firewise.org to find out how you can help make your home more defensible against wildfires. Firewise.org, a public service brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
From out of Washington comes word this morning that taxpayers have been filing electronic tax returns in record numbers. The Internal Revenue Service reported 1 week before the April 15th filing deadline. Nation's tax collectors said Thursday that they received 5 million more electronically filed returns compared with the same time last year. Majority of Americans supporting affirmative action believe race relations have improved since the civil rights movement and approve of interracial marriage. That's according to a new poll. Still, 49% of the blacks said they had experienced some form of discrimination in the month preceding the poll, and 62% believe they are treated somewhat or very unfairly. And despite spending millions of dollars on ads, neither President Bush nor Democrat John Kerry has gained an advantage in the latest public opinion poll. Wayne Gilman, Air America, Radio Network News.
Hi, this is Alan King, and I'd just like to talk about my mother and father, who spent quite a few years at the Hebrew home at Riverdale.
This is the place you know. These are the days you'll remember.
My mother and father needed special care. The level of care at the Hebrew home is as fine as you'll find anywhere in this country. The dignity of the home, the surroundings, paintings, the sculptures. It was wonderful to have this kind of environment. My father used to say this would be a nice place if they didn't have so many old people there. My mother enjoyed all of the facilities at the home. My father loved the view. You know, he came from Florida. And now, looking over the Hudson River, my father says, what's the big deal? I came from one condominium to another. There's only one Hebrew home, and it's in Riverdale.
The Hebrew home at Riverdale. We were there for Alan King, and we're here for you. Call 1-800-56-SENIOR.
Daddy, why is the sky blue?
Well, because Mother Nature wanted to match your pretty little eyes.
Nope, not even close. See, all colors have wavelengths that are diffused by oxygen and nitrogen. Since blue has the shortest wavelength, it's diffused up to 10 times more. So the human eye sees more of it than any other color. That's why the sky looks blue, Daddy.
Who in the world taught you that?
Mommy.
By sixth grade, too many girls lose interest in math and science, and in just a few short years, almost all of the jobs they'll want will depend on having these skills. So keep her interest alive any way you can.
Daddy, do you know why the concept of odd and even is a philosophical illusion?
Why don't you tell me?
For more information and ideas, visit www.girlsgotech.org. Remember, it's her future. Do the math. A public service message brought to you by Girl Scouts of the USA and the Ad Council.
There's a vacation village near Orlando that is unlike any resort in the world. It's for special kids with life-threatening illnesses. It's called Give Kids the World Village, and it provides a week of fun and relaxation for kids and their families. A week of simple pleasures that would make any child smile. Swimming pools, visits to local Orlando theme parks, and unlimited ice cream. A week to live in the moment and to make memories that will last a lifetime. All for free, for their families, too. To find out how you can bring joy into the life of a very sick child, call 800-995-KIDS or visit the Give Kids the World website at gktw.org. And please, help give them a time to remember. Brought to you by Give Kids the World and the Ad Council.
Good morning. I'm Mark Riley, along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron, here on Air America Radio. It's 7 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. Today, we've got Paul Krugman from the New York Times on the president's relationship with Condoleezza Rice and the truth. That's all ahead, but right now, I've got Sue Ellicott and Mark Maron with me.
Hello.
Hello.
Wow, could you, why, you know what? Why did they televise Clinton's testimony, man?
That would have been great. I know, but why was it private? Because they're like, don't, because people remember how great he was. What a charming, great, kind of manipulative, big presence he had.
Did you see him on the TV pictures walking around sort of backstage with his arms, and like ready to hug everybody, totally mugging for the cameras?
You're like, the king is back. You know, I miss him. You know why I miss him? Like, you know, because when he was president, despite whatever he did, you know, lying under oath about, you know, about sex, which oddly didn't bother me because I know what it's like to
many men lie under oath about sex.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not doing it anymore, as we talked about earlier, but, you know, I have done it in my life. But I'll tell you, the tone of culture was so much different, so much more embracing, so much more, you know, open-minded, so much more exciting. I mean, whoever's in the presidential, you know, whoever is in the Oval Office really defines the sort of dominant ideology of the country.
Yeah.
And, you know, when somebody like Bush is in office, that means I got to deal with, you know, bullies, you know, people with narrow minds, people arguing all the time about things they don't know about. And they feel justified because they are validated by whoever's there. And, you know, despite whatever Clinton may have done, whatever his crimes might have been, when he was in office, it was, you know, it was rock and roll. It was, you know,
party.
Geeks on parade. It was like a lot of proud, you know, the freaks got a chance to breathe and have a good time. Everything was better. Art was better. Everything was better.
Let's not stretch it.
No, absolutely. I
mean,
think it's
still,
absolutely
it's,
true.
I mean, in terms of censorship, I mean, it does make a difference when you have Republicans in the White House, you know, controlling both houses on Capitol Hill. But yet, you know, what censorship is really controlled by is who's running the businesses, who's running the media. There hasn't been a big change in that from Clinton to Bush. People still can't run advertisements that they think are sexually provocative, or, you know, Janet Jackson would have been busted for bearing a breast under the Clinton administration. It's not just...
Did she bear a breast under the Clinton administration?
No, but what I was saying was that the tone of culture and people who are creative people and, you know, artists in general, you know, and creative minds and people who are open-minded, when the guy in the Oval Office has created a cultural tone that embraces that, there's a lot more juice going around.
Really?
In those
I don't
areas.
Know if I think that's always true. I think that there's maybe more fun for people who are more provocative and are more outspoken. But I think when you've got something to kind of really rail against, when you've got a repressive government, when you've got a kind of narrow-minded government, kind of morally and ethically, that gives artists and creative people something to kind of really get fired up about.
Are you seeing that?
I think you see it in theatre. We had Tony Kushner on last week. I mean, he's got this great play, Caroline Will Change, about civil rights. You had the movie version of
Angels
in
America.
America.
But the stage version happened under Clinton.
But you know, still, it got an enormous amount of attention.
But I just think that it was a much more comfortable place to live in terms of not having to deal with a sort of restrictive, sort of bullying tone just on a day-to-day basis.
It's just different. I think that, you know, true creativity will, and pronunciations will out somehow.
I hope so. I mean, I hope you're right. I was happy to see him in the news. I would have loved to have seen him testify because I get a kick out of him.
He's looking younger, actually. He's enjoying himself. I think that's the main thing.
My buddy Jim, who used to work for him at Depressive Events, he's working for Kerry. We're going to try and get him on the phone if he'll ever, you know, call me back just so we could have somebody on the plane of the Kerry campaign. He used to work for Clinton. He used to just tell me these great stories, these candid moments where, you know, the guy was just really an intelligent guy. I mean, he was a president who could answer, you know, questions on, you know, several different levels, as opposed to just, you know, just sentences with a few different syllables. I mean, he really was able to assess things, and it must have been a very engaging bit of testimony.
Well, the rest of the world's probably missing Bill Clinton, too. Particularly on a day like today, looking at what's going on in Iraq, the U.S. Marines have resumed their offensive, their operations in Fallujah. They briefly called them to a halt, but that was, in fact, to try to meet with some delegation from the city, have a discussion between with them and the U.S. commanders, and to let humanitarian aid into Fallujah, which is about 30 miles west of Baghdad, and to give residents a chance to tend to their dead. The really interesting thing today is the kidnappings from yesterday, three Japanese, and how this is really going to put new stress on what's already a very fragile military alliance. I think it's going to be increasingly difficult for some countries to resist pressure at home from people who were already opposed to the war a year ago, not to just, you know, to actually scale back their involvement or even to start to pull out troops. And the fact that it's three Japanese, not even soldiers, they were actually humanitarian or you know, aid workers, they're civilians.
They weren't tourists. They were there for
No, not much tourism to Iraq.
But the Prime Minister says he's not going to back off, right?
Yeah. They said that they weren't. Then they threatened to kill these three Japanese aid workers. As you know, one's a freelance journalist. There's one aid worker, one who's also something non-military, and a freelance journalist. And it's a very touchy issue in Japan. This is the first time since World War II that the Japanese has let anybody go, you know, into a war situation. They were very clear.
For any reason?
It's such an issue there, and it was very clear they wanted them to go in on a peacekeeping basis, not into combat. But you're right, they've so far... I saw the father of one of them on television this morning saying that they know... It is actually so philosophical to say, well, I guess what will happen will happen. There was no crying or no histrionics or no emotion. It was just incredibly matter-of-fact and very, very controlled.
But the message was that Japan is not going to be bullied by these terrorist
actions. Yes, we will stand firm, and that's the view of the Japanese government. But I think that the fact that the Spanish threw out their governing coalition and elected the socialists last month after the bombing in Madrid, the bombings in Madrid at the train station, that and they have vowed to pull out the 1,300 Spanish troops who were there, this will have some kind of roller coaster effect.
Did you know that Rush on his show apparently is discussing that there's talk in the right wing radio about how they're assuming that it's almost, you know, definite that there's going to be another terrorist act in the United States, and if there is, and they vote out, and the Americans vote out President Bush, that they will be letting the terrorists win and encouraging socialism in the United States. They're saying that on the air.
That's laughable. But it is very likely that there will be more terrorist attacks here and in other places. We know that.
The idea that a reaction to that in terms of, you know, who we elect for president would be, you know, somehow admitting defeat if we elect somebody other than George Bush is ridiculous, because that's how democracy works, and it's clear that he, you know, didn't stop this first terrorist act.
He's just trying to galvanize his base, like the president.
But it's a win-win argument for them. That they would argue, presumably on Rush Limbaugh or any of the extreme conservatives, that if there's no further terrorist attack between now and November, it's a perfect sign that George Bush is doing a grand job. Therefore, vote for him. And if there is a terrorist attack, they'll still say, but he's still the best person to be looking after you guys. Vote for him.
Yeah, well, they suggested not only that there should be some sort of, you know, suspension of the election. That they are looking for. Yeah, they said that. I read this. I can't quote it specifically, but they said some of them believe that if another terrorist act happens near the election, that the elections, I think it was actually Hannity, that the elections should be suspended and there shouldn't have them, and Bush should stay in for as long as necessary.
They're that desperate for things to talk about to get attention?
What's the difference between that? I don't know enough about how government works. Can the president just amend the Constitution and say, well, I've changed it, I'm king now?
You would have to move to Britain and be the Prime Minister, where at least there you can call your election.
Call your own election.
Don't make him. Don't give him any ideas.
This is fixed. Well, you might be glad if he moved.
No, I know, but I don't want him to say, hey, Tony, you know, is there any way we can work out the language on this for here? Can we make this whole thing
They could organize a national blackout and all those electronic voting machines would go down.
They don't need to. They're already kind of riggable.
You know, you're scaring me now. You know, you're really scaring me.
But between the Diebold voting machines and the
possibility. Well, the Diebold voting machines, Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, and the combined number of people who listen to them. I mean, because there are people.
We had a guy call us the other day and call us socialist, and we asked him, you know, to tell us where we mentioned socialism, and he said,
you're just a socialist.
Actually, it's an interesting point though, because Rush Limbaugh totally deflects attention away from what's going on in Iraq and puts it all back on the kind of terrorism stuff.
Right. That's right.
Totally.
Scary. Coming up, Paul Krugman of the New York Times on Iraq, a radio colleague down for the count, and the all-important liberal agenda. This is Air America Radio. Air America Radio. If you know what's good for you.
The Public Theater in New York presents a play written and directed by Tim Robbins, Embedded.
in a savagely witty, very smart, very screwball, and ultimately very chilling comedy.
San Francisco Chronicle.
Embedded.
Wildly entertaining. You'll find more truth about war on this stage than you'll find in most newspapers.
BBC.
Embedded.
Poisonous.
Who's that from?
The New Republic.
Well.
Embedded.
Savagely witty and incisive, uncompromising.
L.A. Times.
Embedded.
Swift, savage, sharply clever lampoon.
New York Star Ledger.
Embedded.
Bad taste.
Who's that from?
Fox News.
Well.
Embedded.
Excellent, timely, and compellingly cutting satire, a tribute to the finest traditions of drama and political comedy.
Democracy Now.
Embedded by Tim Robbins at the Public Theater.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
We spend almost $500 billion each year. We are a diverse community with a diverse range of needs. We are mothers, fathers, car buyers, and homeowners. We have an above-average discretionary income, and we're willing to spend it. We are brand loyal and favor companies who speak to us. We are an influential voice in everything from politics to fashion. We are sometimes misunderstood, but always willing to listen. We are the estimated 15 million gay and lesbian consumers in the United States. Are we your customers? Qtopia Media is a marketing firm specializing in the gay and lesbian marketplace. If you would like to grow your business by advertising to this important community, please visit www.qtopiamedia.com. That's Qtopiamedia.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. Will you parents please settle down so I can take the classroom attendance? Thank you. Okay, here we go. Brittany's mom and dad.
Present.
Present.
Justin's mom.
Present.
Lisa's dad. I said Lisa's dad. Well, maybe he's on his way. I hope he makes it. Lisa really needs his support. You know, your life can be hectic, but that's really no excuse. You have to get involved in your child's education. It will make a difference, believe me, whether it's checking homework or visiting with the teacher. Be present in your child's classroom. There's always a seat open with your name on it. Well, look who just showed up. Lisa's dad.
Yes, I made it. Present.
There are many ways to get involved in your child's school. Discover how. Call 1-800-281-1313. Or visit www.schoolsuccessinfo.org. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and Partners for Public Education, a partnership for the NAACP and People for the American Way Foundation.
Air America's Unfiltered.
I got to retrain myself to not be awake in the 2 to 5 hours a.m. So that's all.
Liz Winstead, Chuck D, and Rachel Maddow.
Is that when you're most creative?
Yes.
Oh, man.
1 to 5.
1 to 5, and then that's it.
No, that ain't it.
Air America's Unfiltered. Weekdays 9 to noon on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron here on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with my co-hosts Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. And joining us now from his home in New Jersey is New York Times op-ed columnist Paul Krugman. He is the author of The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century. How are you, Paul? Are you there?
Expected.
How you doing? Oh, yeah, as good as to be expected is what you said?
Yeah.
How what's your reaction to the big Condi Rice testimony?
Well, evasive. I'm not sure if she actually said anything that is literally a lie, but, you know, it's what we're watching, I think, is the implosion of the whole Bush myth, and she was defending it, but I don't think it's working.
What myth is that, Paul?
The heroic leader, you know, everything, the man who was exactly what we needed to deal with this completely unanticipated threat. And, of course, now what we're learning is that not necessarily that it could have been prevented, but that he sort of didn't want to deal with terrorism before 9/11. And guess what? He didn't want to deal with terrorism after 9/11 either.
And how does he want to deal with it now?
Well, he wants to, you know, this is one of the great tragedies of American history. Here we were faced with a very serious threat, and we had a bunch of guys who had saw it not as something to be dealt with, but as something that could be exploited to pursue one of their pet obsessions.
And this is a pattern with them?
Yeah, it's been a, it's a pattern with everything. They, it's this is by the way, I'm an economist by training. I was hired by the Times to write mostly about economics and business, and I got into the Iraq war debate because I looked at this and I said, this sounds just like the tax cuts. This is they're taking something in recession. They said it's a reason to do what we always wanted to do anyway, which is cut taxes, which turned out to not be what we needed to deal with the recession. And they took 9/11 and said this is a reason to do to invade Iraq, which had nothing to do with it, and but was a long-term obsession of theirs. And it's a terrible thing.
Mm-hmm. One of the favorite essays of mine in your book is called The One-Eyed Man, and it's in the section entitled Exploiting September the 11th. And I'm kind of interested in what you think, you know, the biggest damage that they've done by using 9/11 as a smokescreen to push forward other items on their agenda in the United States. What would be the most damage they've done?
They've done so much damage on so many fronts, it's kind of hard. By the way, you may have noticed I didn't write about this today in the Times, partly because I figured everyone else was going to be writing about it and I should wait a couple of days, but partly because it's very difficult to write about this, what's happening in Iraq now, without using obscenities. But anyway.
And you're helping to keep us on the air, at least for a few
that's
moments.
Right. It's hard to broadcast without them using them, too,
that's
sometimes.
That's right. So it's
feel free to shout at your TV set, though.
Yeah. But the thing is that clearly, I mean, the most pressing thing is we've now created enemies we never thought we didn't need to have. You know, that's the so the foreign policy disaster is truly amazing. But there's lots of other stuff. I mean, would Bush have been able to roll back large portions of the Clean Air Act without 9/11, which is what he has done with While You Weren't Looking? So it's a terrible situation across the board.
You write a lot about how, you know, television really and the sort of simplicity of television has allowed the Bush administration to get away with a lot on all of this, and that the war has really become a spectator sport. What are the big stories that everybody failed to pay attention to?
Well, budget. It's very abstract, and yet the truth is that Our future has been, you know, basically our birthright has been sold.
He's been gutted. He gutted all the money out of it.
That's right. I was doing the numbers, and it turns out that the Bush tax cuts will add about $5 trillion in debt over the next 10 years.
How do you even pay that back? I haven't got that kind of money.
Yeah. Well, you know, at some point somebody's going to have to explain to the country that we need to get those. We need more revenue.
Why do they say deficits don't matter?
Well, because they look at Reagan and they say, well, he got away with it.
Oh, so
I know that there's a part of the coalition, the people running this country, who welcome deficits because they see it as a way eventually to kill Social Security and Medicare. And that's what the ideologues behind
to make it to privatize it completely.
Well, to eliminate them. I mean, privatize really means eliminate. And they're saying what we're going to do at some point is say, well, you know, we just don't have the money and we can't raise taxes, so you got to slash these programs, privatize them. But that really means that they'll disappear.
Well, what happens to all those people that they actually work for?
Well, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the question. And why did
not our kind, darling? The other thing is but. I think basically what's happening with the Bushies themselves is that they take a look and say, well, we can get away with this for 4 or 5 years, and who knows what things will be like then, and so let's go for the political advantages right now.
But tell us how the economy is really doing in your eyes.
It's miserable. It's not a depression, right? But, I mean,
miserable.
You know anybody who's been trying to find a job? I mean, most of us do, though I wonder whether the people making policy are just so sheltered that they have no idea. But it's very everything you look at. If you talk to people who are out of work, they'll tell you it's very grim out there. If you look at the right numbers, like the average length of time that the unemployed stay unemployed, which is at a 20-year high, it's miserable out there. The general picture is that we have what you could call a recovery by some measures, but it really is the worst economy for people looking for work that it has been since the Reagan years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You're a pretty radical guy for somebody who works for the Times, aren't you?
That's the funny thing. I'm not. I'm a moderate. I'm a mildly liberal, economistically oriented guy. And
does that qualify as a special interest group?
Probably. The thing is that I've been willing to say negative stuff. I've been willing to say really negative stuff about the Bushies at a time when everyone was busy burnishing this hero image.
Hey, you know,
I was willing to take on the cult of personality a long time before other people were, and that's why I've got this reputation as a radical. But actually, I'm a raving moderate.
Hey, Paul, can we get right back to you here? Will you hold on a second? We have to take a break for the headlines and for my own quick message to a soul who's hurting out there. It's time for Recovery Corner. My name's Mark. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
And in the Recovery Corner, I reach out to fellow 12-steppers who are struggling to stay clean and sober. Today, I'm offering counsel to one George W., who's in his third day of isolation in Crawford, Texas. Hey, George, I hope you're working your program down there. God knows there must have been some fellow drunks in your NRA hunting party yesterday. Just remember, you know, people, places, and things. Be careful. You know, make some phone calls if you have to. As a fellow addict, I can understand your reluctance to step forward and testify before the 9/11 Commission, but take a cue from another addict who did step up and testify, Bill Clinton. Granted, he's addicted to sex, you know, not cheap frat house beer and blow, but did you see how the commission responded to him? They loved him, George. They loved him. They said he's even smarter and more charming than before. But look, don't hate Clinton for being great. That's a resentment, and that'll put a drink in your hand. Follow his lead, though. He went before the panel alone, all right? He answered. He cleaned up his side of the street alone. You don't need to bring Cheney with you. Come on. You can be who you are, even if it is, you know, disappointing in some ways. But, you know, it's okay to accept that. You know, you got to go alone and admit to God, to yourself, and to the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks upon the U.S. the exact nature of your wrongs. You know, let the commission love you until you learn to love yourself. And remember, first things first, think, one day at a time. Do the next right thing. Let go and let God. La, 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 la. That's Recovery Corner for today.
We'll be back with Paul Krugman of the New York Times and you on the telephones at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. But first, a quick check of the headlines on the half hour.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The fighting for control of the violence-prone Iraqi city of Fallujah continues. Despite a lunchtime break for peace talks, those efforts fell on deaf ears, since the lull in the fighting only lasted an hour, providing ample time for attack victims to tend to their dead and for the U.S. to pull in more supplies. One U.S. commander believes there were never really any talks to begin with, since the fighting never halted. The White House thinks National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice struck a home run, appearing confident and in response to a series of 9/11 questions yesterday. But the families of the victims in attendance and others on the panel felt Rice fell short of the mark. They were expecting more and left disappointed. Defense attorneys for former NBA star Jason Williams, now facing murder charges for the killing of his limo driver, are demanding that his 8-count indictment be dismissed. They're citing what they call intentional and egregious prosecutorial misconduct. At a sure sign of spring in New York yesterday, this says domestic diva Martha Stewart joined America's Mayor Rudolph Giuliani and others at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx for opening day. Yanks beat the White Sox in their series opener. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Air America Radio. Because at this rate, Jeb.
My name is Tyler. I'm 15 years old. I was 11 years old when I found out that I had cancer. I was afraid that I was going to lose my leg.
For Tyler, a bone transplant meant a chance to live a normal life.
If I hadn't had the transplant, I would probably have a prosthesis. But the transplant let me be a normal kid again. I play lots of golf. I love golf. That's pretty much my sport. I've been in a few tournaments and I've done pretty well.
Tyler is among the hundreds of thousands of people who've been given their life back, all because someone else made the decision to become an organ donation.
Well, I'm just like any other regular high school kid. I just like to do a lot of things with my friends, and sometimes I tell people that I got my scars on a sharp rock. Girls love it when I tell them that. think people should become a donor because it gives someone else their life back.
You have the power to donate life. Be an organ and tissue donor. To find out how, go today to www.donatelife.net.
I'm Sue Ellicott on Air America with Mark Riley and Mark Maron, and we want you to call us with any questions that you have for Paul Krugman, columnist at New York Times and radically moderate economist. Anybody out there?
That number, 866-303-AAR0. 866-303-2270.
George in Long Island, what's going on?
How you doing, George?
Morning.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I'm very happy that you guys are on the air and that Air America's on the air.
Thank you.
You have a question for Paul Krugman at the New York Times?
I do. As soon as Clinton was elected to office, it seems that everybody everywhere was trying to get him out. There was the Whitewater scandal, there was Monica Gate, which who cares because the economy was doing good anyway. But Bush is in office. Nobody questions what he's doing. Nobody questions everything that he does. Nobody's trying to get him out. Why is there such a big difference between the two ways the two presidents are treated?
Paul?
The short answer is yes, Virginia, there is a vast right-wing conspiracy.
I knew it.
The Clinton scandals, no, none of them, except for Monica, was there anything to it? It was this constant air of scandal that was fomented by a network of think tanks, publications, all of which was funded by a handful of angry, you know, personally dysfunctional billionaires. And that's basically what happened, and the media fell for it and continued to circulate it.
Because those billionaires own part of the media.
Yep.
Yes, although I think, some of it definitely, but even parts that weren't, just kind of mob psychology.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened to Clinton, and the same machinery is now turned not against the man in the White House, but against anyone who criticizes the man in the White House.
Hmm.
And that's the big difference between the two.
And that's why I have to go home in an armored car.
That's right. Well, you guys are probably starting to get some of it, although it's really pretty striking if you're actually in the mainstream media by accident, that if you're critical, boy, does the hate mail and the attempts to fund that personal scandals come. You know, it's really not very pleasant, and not many people in the media are willing to stand up to that.
Yeah, they'll call you a socialist and stuff.
Yeah.
Worse than that.
Well, you've written that you feel actually since 9/11, when everybody was called to, you know, be patriotic or at least pose as patriotic, that business reporters have been the best journalists to follow on what is the true state of this country. Why is that? Why are they more truthful than anybody else?
Because, first of all, because they just don't, they're not as much in the line of fire. Basically, if someone writes on a business story on page C1 of the New York Times that says that, gee, there's a lot of corruption there and some of these corrupt people are pretty close to the White House, that doesn't get the scandal machinery, the attack dogs going the way a story on page A1 saying that President Bush may not be the shining hero that we portray him as generates. So, and the other thing is the business reporters, they do numbers. And because they do numbers, it was obvious to them, not obvious soon enough, but obvious to them a lot before the political reporters were willing to admit it, that these guys in the White House lie a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just had, all along, you were getting a lot better picture of the fundamental dishonesty and irresponsibility of our leadership from business magazines and from the business pages of newspapers than you were from the political pages, which up until just weeks ago were insisting that we had wise, foresighted, courageous leadership.
So you're saying people just don't find it as much fun to follow or as easy to follow Enron and Tyco as it is to, you know, click the remote and watch people going into battle in the Middle East?
Oh, well, yes. I mean, that was... There's this terrible, you know, glamour romance about war, which, of course, is foolish if you have any idea what it's really like. Sometimes I think that everything is about the photo ops. And the trouble is that until now, again, the photo ops have all been really good for the Bushies. Whereas if you actually kind of looked at the books, it's not nearly so good. And by the way, they've tried to mix those things together. A few weeks ago, I wrote a piece about the budget of the United States, which is the numbers document, but it turns out that this year's federal budget, for the first time ever, contains no less than 27 heroic photographs of the president. The president, the president with his arm around a woman in a wheelchair. The president teaching reading to a small black child. You know, it's
was he reading? Well,
gee, that must have been.
Did they have the picture where he puts on his reading glasses? That's always a good one.
Yeah,
I'm sure they've got one.
Pretty soon they're going to be posting them on all the buildings.
That's right. I know. I think that if they could, they'd be. They've moved a fair ways towards it, but yeah, I think I said that they didn't have the photo of the president swimming the Yangtze River, but they will next time.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to our telephones at 866-303-2270. Let's say good morning to Cheryl from Chicago. Cheryl, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Are you listening on 9:50 a.m.?
No, I'm listening on the net.
Okay, cool.
Get on it, Cheryl.
Okay, one thing that I noticed that really struck me yesterday about the testimony was Rice said that she didn't have time before 9/11 to put the structural changes in place, that it was absolutely impossible. They had so much on their plate, yada, yada, yada. The vacation got in the way, I'm sure. But they did so immediately after 9/11. Now, does that jump out at you as like this huge dereliction of duty, like all of a sudden, you know, they're just catching up and everything? But she made it sound so impossible beforehand, but... You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Let's ask Paul. Go ahead,
yeah,
Paul.
And let's be clear. The immediate thing that they were supposed to do, now, I don't know if 9/11 could have been prevented, but when you get warnings that are saying something big is going down, possibly in the United States sometime soon, you don't say, okay, let's think about redrawing the organization chart. You start trying, as Richard Clark says, you start shaking the tree. You try to make sure that everybody is hyped up about this so that information bubbles up to the top where you can do something about it, and she didn't do that. The other thing is, of course, after 9/11, you have to remember, people mostly forgotten how hard this administration fought to prevent any fundamental changes. You know, they opposed creating the Department of Homeland Security until Colleen Rowley, remember her? Until her testimony, then all of a sudden...
Who was she? Sorry, I don't remember.
Well, she was the FBI agent who went public with all of the ignored warnings and criticizing her superiors,
mm-hmm.
Who promptly, as soon as the TV cameras were off her, the people that she accused of dereliction received bonuses and promotions.
And where is she, by the way?
I think she was in Minneapolis. Somewhere. I've got a New Yorker.
Oh, good. She can get us on Air America, then.
She's another person not appearing at the 9/11 Commission testifying.
That's right. And there are amazing things. It's worth, you know, for me, the worst few months of my life were the period right after 9/11, when I saw this terrible abuse of the event, and nobody wanted to hear about it. And do people remember that Bush fought tooth and nail to keep airport screening in the hands of private companies? Companies that, right?
I remember that.
They've done not a thing about terrorism that they didn't have to do under absolute political duress. And, of course, as soon as they could, they changed the subject and said, terrorism, Osama, Saddam, and somehow it became a war against Iraq instead of actually pursuing the guys who actually attacked us.
Okay. We're talking with Paul Krugman, op-ed columnist for the New York Times, and our number is 866-303-2270. Let us go next to Alan. Alan, good morning.
Hey, Alan.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering... can you tell me about a report that the IRS came out with about the Bush tax cut, where for low- and middle-class Americans, the tax cut actually made those taxes go up 4%, and how it made the top 1%, the richest Americans, taxes went down 42%, while ours went up 4%?
I haven't seen that report. I think if you take the actual tax numbers, everybody gets either nothing or some tax cut. There aren't any tax increases in there on paper. I mean, in practice, what it does is it means that state and local governments are desperately short of revenue and as a side consequence, and they end up raising taxes, which falls on poorer people. But directly, I don't think there are any tax increases at the bottom end.
Hey, Paul.
But the tax cuts are huge for the top end. The 42% is 42% of the 2001 tax cut goes to the richest 1%. And these things are a huge tax break. It's not just, by the way, level of wealth. It's also type of income. But the whole thrust of what this administration is doing is to make sure that tax rates on unearned income, on dividends, on capital gains, you know, it basically taxes on money that you get from wealth, inherited, go down and eventually to zero, while taxes on remain on wages.
Can I ask you a question, Paul, about how is this administration, why is it that the people that are least represented, you know, by government and usually, you know, the most, you know, screwed by taxes, how is it sold to them that this is their guy? How does he pull that off?
Part of it is just mannerism, right? The whole
it's a hat,
cowboy
isn't it?
Thing.
So it's just the appeal of the narrow-minded bully?
Some of that, yes. And the regular guy mannerisms. I mean, it's they've mastered this, right? You follow elitist policies but talk like a regular guy.
Yeah.
And part of it is religion. You just have to – you can't understand what's going on without – understanding the role of the religious right.
Christian right, yeah.
You know, all these people whose pastors are telling him that Bush is a good man, which
and that's a huge voting block, right? It's like 23 million people or something.
Yeah. And then, you know, the truth is, when all is said and done, that, in fact, on average, the higher your income, the more likely you are to vote for Bush. I mean, you don't want to exaggerate this, but there's a lot of people out there, particularly in red states, in the middle of the country, who don't understand that they're on the losing end of what's going on.
Right.
Paul Krugman, thank you. We're really out of time, but thank you so much. Paul Krugman, op-ed page, columnist, economist, author of The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century. Thank you very much.
Have
a good weekend.
Great talking to you.
All right. When we come back, our favorite stories and Friday's liberal agenda here on Air America Radio. Air America. Well, here they go again.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
Well, actually, for New York's Roundabout Theater Company, whether or not they're going to be is no question at all. Over 800,000 people enjoy their productions every year. And in just the last 10 years, Roundabout has won 15 Tonys and 18 Drama Desk Awards. But the only prize they didn't have was a theater all their own. But that's now changed, thanks in part to a bond issue insured by American Capital Access. The funds raised have helped Roundabout buy Studio 54, the same space where they packed audiences with a 5-year run of Cabaret. The building is ideal for Roundabout staging of classic American musicals. And the bonds are pitch perfect for New York investors. They're fully insured by ACA, so they deliver a higher yield without higher risk. And for city residents, they're triple tax exempt. Around this time of year, that makes for savings even your accountant can get theatrical about. To learn more, ask your broker about ACA-insured bonds or visit us at ACA.com.
At Volunteers of America, we don't just give kids a way to stay off the streets. We give them the tools they need to reach their full potential. We don't just help the elderly receive needed care. We help them live life to the fullest. We don't just provide food for homeless individuals and families. We provide job training and placements so they can buy groceries. Volunteers of America is a national organization that for over 100 years has provided programs and services that allow people to overcome their challenges to become vital members of their community. At Volunteers of America, we don't just help people. We help people help themselves. Find out how you can support the programs that are working in your community. Contact Volunteers of America today. Call 1-800-899-0089. That's 1-800-899-0089.
Welcome to the Hot House Cafe. What can I get you?
Hello, Flo.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Wildfire. You're looking incendiary today. What can I get you, sweet pea?
Let's see. I'm so hungry I could consume a neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
I think I'll start with the toasted wood-shaped shingle sandwich.
All right. Super salad, baby doll.
And the backyard dry brush salad looks delicious. I'll have that.
Okie dokie, with or without succulents?
Without. You know I can't stand water-retaining plants.
Oh, that's right.
And for dessert, I'd like an old gazebo sundae, sprinkled with irreplaceable photos and family heirlooms.
Anything to drink, baby?
Lawnmower gasoline. Unless you have some carelessly stored paint thinner.
I think we just might.
Goodie.
Knowing what wildfire likes to eat is half the battle. Visit firewise.org to find out how you can help make your home more defensible against wildfires. That's firewise.org, a public service brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Listen to Air America Radio whenever and wherever you want. We're available 24/7 on the internet. Just hit our website, www.airamericaradio.com. All you need to do is complete a quick online registration. Once that's done, you're ready to take us live. Air America uses the Real One player for our streaming. www.airamericaradio.com. Streaming now, live, 24/7. www.airamericaradio.com.
Mark Maron with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio's Morning's Edition. My brain went into lockdown because I know we're coming into our landing, the weekend.
And you know what? You know? There's a pint of Haagen-Dazs waiting for you as soon as
you
get off the plane.
I got to lay off that. It's weird. I get home and I'll sit down. I'll get undressed and start watching TV and I'll be like, I got to get dressed again. I'll sit there and battle with myself, the battle between good... Evil and Haagen-Dazs.
You know what this used to be called, though?
What?
But you don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I know.
It used to be called the munchies. Straight up.
No, this is just pure, trying to fill the emptiness inside. That's all.
This is existential angst.
This is what I do instead of religion. I do ice cream.
Ice cream, okay.
So I'm starting to believe Stern. I'm starting to believe they took him off of all of Clear Channels, six Clear Channels. They dropped him. And I'm starting to think that maybe he's right. Maybe the Republicans are chasing him down. The right is winning. Mm-hmm. He's being pushed off the air because of the Christian right.
I think that Clear Channel wants to expand. Clear Channel is the eggplant that ate Chicago. They got, 1,200 stations?
They have a military arm now.
Yeah.
They actually have Clear Channel uniformed soldiers.
Alpha Talk.
They will go into, if you're having a concert in a small bar and they're not getting a cut, they will send the Clear Channel militia
and
out
start
there,
breaking glass.
And they will bully the promoter. They will. I read this in Harper's. I'm exaggerating a little bit.
Only a little.
Yeah.
A tad.
So they took him off six stations. Those six stations, or Clear Channel, was fined $500,000.
Close to, yeah. But yeah. It's just big business. This is not really, it looks great to say it's a censorship thing and it's the right wing. Perhaps that has something to do with it. But it's a little bit much when Stern goes on about land of the free and home of the brave. Land of the free, absolutely, freedom of speech. But home of the brave? How brave is he being, folks?
Who, Stern?
Yes.
Well, not very, but this is not new. I went to a rally he had back in the mid-80s when they were after him back then.
Yeah.
It was in Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza. He couldn't stand in the place. It was gigantic.
I remember that
rally.
From the movie. He goes through this. He's been through this before. Not on this larger scale, but let me ask you something. If you think it's just big business, how come there's not the possibility that the government is pandering to the Christian right contingent of
everybody's
their voters?
Pandering. You're right. Everybody's pandering. But
how come that doesn't trickle down to the FCC? Wouldn't it be? It's a government agency.
But the FCC is pandering to Congress and to the government.
Yeah. It's a win-win situation. Everybody panders.
It's mutual pandering.
Yeah. Right. Everybody gets to pander. Everybody gets to say, well, we're trying to clean up the airwaves.
But why would they want to clean? Why can't we just have the choice?
That is good.
Because
so
little
you.
Kitties listen between 6 a.m. There's a regulation between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. when children, and this is the way it's worded, when children might be listening.
I'm fighting my baser instincts right now because
when you're losing, but that's okay.
All right, let me pull my pants up.
All right, thank you very much. We don't want any actionable stuff going.
So you got favorite stories today, kids?
I got one.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, mine is it really has to do with something that went on earlier this week when we were talking about John Kerry's political advertisements that we heard here, which were unimpressive to me personally.
Yes, yeah, I remember we said that was when he fell asleep in the 3-minute ad block.
Yeah. Now it seems like there's a reason. There is a feud going on between consultants to John Kerry. One is Jim Margulis, who is the person that did a lot of the commercials during the primaries, the ones with his boys from Vietnam,
right?
Yeah,
good.
They were thought to be extremely, extremely successful. Well, Bob Schrum, who is the other primary consultant, got into a feud with Margolis about how they were going to split the commissions. Because, you know, consultants get a certain amount of money for every commercial that they place.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing. That's how they make their money.
That's a racket.
Yeah. I mean, I always thought that, you know, they made their money by sitting down with the candidate and explaining how to do it. No.
And the candidate going, wow, that's good. Here's an extra 20.
Yeah. They're a media buying service, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a particular split between the two of them as to how much they were getting. And then the Kerry campaign changed the split and gave more money to Shrum than to Margolis.
So Margolis is pissed.
Yeah, Margolis is pissed. And he's kind of downplaying his role in the campaign.
Uh-huh. He's like blaming the boring ads on the other guy?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. What Shrum's fault.
Well, let's see what they come up with. I kind of like this dangerous space rocks under watch from the CNN website about the Near-Earth Object Observation Program. These people are spending a fortune to try and track down asteroids that are more than a kilometer in diameter that might approach the planet. Yeah, well, my producers think I might actually be happy one day, but here's my favorite quote.
Yeah.
Do you think it came from the asteroid hunters or from Condoleezza Rice?
Okay.
This is it. At the current state of knowledge, it is about as likely to happen next week as in a randomly selected week 1,000 years from now. Terrorist attack or asteroid hitting the Earth, folks?
Both.
It's supposed to be the asteroid attack. Maybe we could get these astronomers, you know, working in the anti-terrorism campaign.
I think that they're actually trying to not only get the asteroids in space and destroy them, but they're also figuring out a way to guide them into potential targets. They're going to make the asteroids work for us.
But one asteroid per terrorist cell?
Well, per terrorist country, I think, if they're that big. You know, I think that the satellite they're putting up there is going to be the strategic air defense satellite and the asteroid re-guidance satellite. And if worse comes to worse, we'll destroy it. But if we can make it work for us, we will. My favorite story, of course, is going to be the woman who killed her consultant. But that's done. And she refused antipsychotic medication after arrest. If her all of a sudden failed to rise from the dead on his 9th birthday, I say wait till Sunday. You know, because, you know, I mean, I think, you know, don't rush this. You don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe things will turn around. And, you know, she is not being killed for this offense because it's insanity.
It's insanity. She's been acquitted.
Yeah, but I think, you know, if they did a little research, there's probably a couple of really, really extremely devout, paranoid Christians who are holding a vigil at her. You're right. And it is Easter, and you don't want to, you're hedging your bets. It's Pasquale's wager, right?
It's a sad and sick story.
I didn't say it wasn't. But, you know, I still think that they should wait till Sunday before they really close the book on this
one. Oh, dear.
Well, where is she being? What hospital is she going to be?
Why, you want to visit?
Yeah.
It doesn't say the hospital. Why
I want to send Errol Morris to visit. You know, I watched The Thin Blue Line the other day.
That's a beautiful movie.
Well, it is a beautiful movie, and I actually went out and bought the CD, The Score, which is done by Philip Glass.
Right.
And, Errol Morris should do something on Texas Wackos. I mean, he did the thing about The Thin Blue Line, which took place in Texas. But this woman and Andrea Yates and all these other people, Errol Morris would be perfect to document this. Insanity.
Postpartum depression and this type of psychosis is very interesting and very frightening.
Yeah.
And it is a sad story.
This is not postpartum. The children, well, one of them was 9.
But doesn't that count? I mean, if one of them was young, doesn't postpartum depression, they lasted with my mother throughout my entire childhood.
Well,
my mother was postpartum.
We can fully understand that.
My mother claimed postpartum depression. Don't feel bad for my mother. Are you kidding? Here's how my mother compliments me. Mark, I heard that you were doing good. I couldn't tell.
I think I might like to take your mom out for tea.
Yeah, you want to take my mom out?
Yeah, I would like to take your mom out. She and I have some things to talk about.
I wonder.
Uh-oh.
You'll probably learn more about me than I want to be willing to let you know.
Yeah, right.
My mother knows things that I didn't know that she knew about me, and that makes me very
when you got caught
out.
Smoking in high school and that sort of thing.
Well, that was nothing. But she's like, didn't you have sex with that girl? I say, how would you know that? All right, you know, it's almost time here for our liberal agenda. You know, I think we're waiting for the facts. As you know, our philosophical leader, Ms. Barbara Streisand, gives us our daily rundown of all our important liberal causes. Is the facts coming in? Is it? Uh-huh. Well, what do you know? Right when I said that, the facts came. It's amazing.
You're genius,
all right, here we
Mark.
Go. I have power, man.
I have
mystical power. Here it is. Remember, liberal soldiers, write these down. Our liberal agenda for today. 1, petition PTA to insist evolution be taught in gym class. 2, stop rush hour bridge traffic to insist on wheelchair access.
3, have honorary Martin Luther King hour every day. 4, blame CIA for poor cell phone reception. I did that earlier.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
Yeah. 5, in honor of Good Friday, stage Gay Passion of the Christ, starring a black Jesus and a Gary Magdalene. 6, insist Al-Qaeda open up terror training to women. They have that, I think, though. That's it.
That's
all.
So way ahead of you today.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, I was just reading it as it came out of the machine. So you got a busy day ahead, and get out there and do Barbara's will, liberals. That's our liberal agenda for this Good Friday.
This is Good Friday, isn't it?
What are you doing this weekend? You going to church? You doing a thing?
I'm going to church on Sunday, yeah.
Beautiful. Have
Easter
a good
egg
time.
Hunt.
And you, Sue?
I'm hiding a lot of chocolate eggs.
Yeah. You have kids, right?
No, Mark, why would you say that?
Oh, wait a minute.
Dan birthday
Patrick.
Tomorrow.
Welcome,
all right.
Dan O'Murder 1.
Happy birthday.
Happy
Dan.
Birthday, man. And we mean that. And soon we're going to get you a woman.
I'll save you an egg,
I'll be at the comedy show.
Just a small one.
Join us Monday on Air America. We'll look ahead to the September 11th testimony of John Ashcroft and Louis Free with some help from columnist and author Joe Klein. Join us for Monday's morning's edition here on Air America Radio. See ya.
Happy Easter.
Bye.
Air America Radio. Divide branches of government, not races of people.
The Public Theater in New York presents a play written and directed by Tim Robbins, Embedded.
A savagely witty, very smart, very screwball, and ultimately very chilling comedy.
San Francisco Chronicle.
Embedded.
Wildly entertaining. You'll find more truth about war on this stage than you'll find in most newspapers.
BBC.
Embedded.
Poisonous.
Who's that from?
The New Republic.
Whoa.
Embedded.
Savagely witty and incisive, uncompromising.
LA Times.
Embedded.
Swift, savage, sharply clever lampoon.
New York Star Ledger.
Embedded.
Bad taste.
Who's that from?
Fox News.
Whoa.
Embedded.
Excellent, timely, and compellingly cutting satire, a tribute to the finest traditions of drama and political comedy.
Democracy Now!
Embedded by Tim Robbins at the Public Theater.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
Order tickets now.
212-239-6200.
Hey, this is Rachel from Unfiltered on Air America Radio, where we promise you news and opinions you will not hear anywhere else, including on the rest of the network.